Monday morning in episode 3,616 of the Survival Podcast. We are going to have a good one today. As it is a Monday, it is, of course, a Just Jack show. And if you're in the live stream, remember, I'm like a wild card in poker. Yes, I'm a one-eyed Jack. I've only got one decent eye. The other one sees, but not in any way meaningful. So that means I only have one eye to do all the multitasking I have to do when I'm by myself. And if you would like to ask a question or make a comment you want me to comment back on, then you need to do the following, just like it says down there in that little screamer going across your screen. Put the word question or comment in all caps, then maybe a hyphen in a space or whatever, and then your question or comment. And do it in one sentence. And then if you want more details, you can give them. And then you're more likely for me to see it and to answer it and to know what you're asking because, well, since you made it into a sentence, it's not too long and it's not too short. It's a complete thought. And remember this when you do ask me questions in the live stream with the word question you want me to do at the end. You could be doing it 15 minutes in the show. It could be an hour and a half before I get to it. I may not remember. So at least reference what you're asking. Do you think it? I don't know what it is by the time I get there. Anyway, enough of that. Let's go ahead and tell you what we're going to talk about today. I'm going to talk about why spending your Bitcoin, as many Bitcoin maxis like insist that you do, is almost always, notice the word almost always, stupid. It's very stupid and you shouldn't do it. Almost always. One of the things you'll find out about me is it is pretty rare that I speak in absolutes. There are certain things that are absolutely true, and we can speak in absolutes to those things, but most things are some level of it depends, and we'll talk about the it depends when we get there. But there's also like this compulsion. It's like this autistic need to have everything the way you think it should be, even if it doesn't make any sense. That I'm just going to say the autism is strong in the Bitcoin space, and I am a big-time Bitcoiner. I fight my autism with rational thought, though. Are people in the United States inventing problems because they're just bored? I'll tell you the genesis of where I got that idea and a proof point that I'm going to show you today as to where it's true. Like, I think most of the problems in America today are due to the fact that people are bored and they don't have real problems. And do humans need problems? Are we innately wired to have something to fight against, to struggle? Is that a survival instinct that got us to where we are? And the complete absence of it, if we don't fill it with something useful, if we don't come up with something to challenge ourselves with, do we invent problems? I think we do. Eggs are not scarce because the birds are dying of the bird flu. There's so many birds dying. No, they're not. Not only are the producers killing them, they find one bird that tests positive for bird flu, even if there's nothing wrong with it. They kill the whole flock. They kill a whole like laying house or the whole facility's birds. They're being paid to do it. A stupid amount of money. The special children are already blaming Trump for this. Chickens take 22 to 24 weeks to go from baby chicken to egg-laying chicken. This is no matter what you think of Orangeman, this is not his fault. And then we're going to talk about past boom and bust cycles. Cannabis.com. You guys are come up with some more for me when we get there. Start thinking now, maybe jot them down so when I ask, you're ready to go. What are some other boom and bust cycles? How does this apply to AI? And there's something about that. Like if you think of the dot-com boom, did the internet go away? No. The cannabis bust and boom, boom and bust, did cannabis go away? No. That's not what I'm saying. Some of you know what I'm saying. Some of you will have to wait till we get to that subject. And Columbia cried uncle to Orange Man less than one day. Really, it was like an hour. So Orange Man sent a couple plane loads of deported Colombians back to Colombia. Colombia said, we won't even let you land. And then Trump said some things, and then the Colombian president said some things, and then Trump said, okay, FAFO. And about an hour later, he said, you know, we changed our mind. Right? But talk about the bigger implications of this, the good and the bad. Getting exactly what you want that fast in a situation is good in some ways if what you're trying to do is decent. But it can be bad because it can be like, well, you know, you pick a stock and it goes up 300% and then you think you're a trading expert. Yeah, we'll talk about that and how that can backfire. There's a new crypto executive order. I talked a little bit about last week, but I'm going to talk a little bit more about what it means this week. It's an executive order about cryptocurrency, not specifically Bitcoin. It's wonderful news for Bitcoin and many things within the Bitcoin space, though. So, of course, our friends, again, the autistic, toxic maxis of Bitcoin, are losing their minds, crying and throwing tantrums. Because winning at 98% is not good enough for these people. I don't understand it. I thought these people were smart. I've learned a lot from them. Why are they losing their minds when they're winning? I don't. Maybe they're not used to winning. Oh, RFK Jr. is going to be confirmed. I know some of you don't believe that. The media says it's not sure. Like, they're going to fight it. Whatever. I'm going to tell you that there's enough Democrats that are going to vote for this guy that he's going to be confirmed. Like, Fetterman for one of them. Fetterman is good. Sanders is a yes on the RFK vote. So you can lose a couple, you know, rhino Republicans there. And you know, if it goes back to a Hegseth thing where it's a 50-50, old JD will come in and break the tie. Then the JFK, MLK, and RFK files are going to be declassified. What will we learn, if anything? I said last week, I don't think we're going to learn as much as people think. I'm wondering if we will find out something that I'll repeat when we get to it that I've talked about before. We may not, but I think it's actually going to make the conspiracy theories worse. Worse. Remember I said about inventing problems? I think that I want to know the truth about a lot of these things, but the reality is there's a lot of shit going on today that's way more important than what happened 40, 50, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, whatever, depending on what one we're going to dig up. And again, I'm not saying just ignore it, but there are people that seem like they can't handle not having something to be screaming about. I'm just saying. And then I have a message for government employees who are currently terrified. That's their own words. They're terrified. They're terrified of audits. They're terrified of Trump. They're terrified of Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency. I have a message for them. It'll be short and sweet. If we deport people here illegally, who are here illegally, are we all going to die? I mean, that's how the Democrats are talking right now. The big thing is, will we all get killed by our grass? According to Democrats, the grass will grow so tall it will engulf our homes and kill us. Because apparently white people can't run lawnmowers. I guess black people can't. We need illegals to run lawnmowers. But I ran a poll on X asking you guys who cuts your lawn. I don't think there'll be a lot of surprises to how that worked out. And then the last thing I want to talk to you about today, spring is going to spring a lot faster than you think. Now is the time to like start your plants or at least get everything ready to start your plants. If you're going to get birds this year and you want them to produce before like next year, like now's the time to either hatch your own eggs or order your birds. We'll talk a little kick in the ass about TikTok. The clock ticks for us all. And I know it seems crazy to be talking about spring. We're not even done with January yet. But a lot of us, spring is March, right? I know the first day of spring, March 21st, but for a lot of us, like second week of March, we're planting stuff. Even a lot of you other guys, though, like end of March, beginning of April, it's going to go like that. You always think you have more time than you do, and you do not have more time than you you don't have as much time as you think you do. All right. Today's sponsors of the day are K9 Academy. You can learn more at k9academy.us. That is Joel Riles. He also, of course, has Fortress K9, where he provides dogs that are protection-trained dogs. And puppies that are well started as well, working specifically with Belgian Malinois, Dutch Shepherds, and German Shepherds, all of working line breed. And he also has, again, k9academy.us. This is where if you don't want to buy a fully trained dog and you want to train your dog, you can learn how to do that in a way that really makes sense from a guy that's been doing it for an awful long time. But I don't need a protection dog. It doesn't matter. K9 Academy will help you out if you just want, excuse me. What the heck was that? It's like a thing in the throat there. But if you just want a really great homestead dog, if you just want a good obedient dog, just a good dog for your home, it's all the same. The training methods are the same. And the core canine core obedience course is one that I recommend for everybody that's going to be a dog owner. It will make your life a lot better. You'll learn the three C's of training your dog. And once you know how to use that, you'll be able to do anything you need as far as training your dog to do what you're looking to get them to do. Next up today is Start 9. Start 9 is a great way to like reclaim your right to your own information, take control of your technology. With a Start9 server, you can do so many things. You can run a Bitcoin node. You can run a Lightning node. You can be your own bank if you're selling online by doing that. But there's more. You can do end-to-end encrypted messaging. You can store all your files and have them accessible to you from anywhere in the world, totally encrypted and over Tor. That way nobody can ever shut you off. Do you believe in the cloud? The cloud is not real. There's no cloud. Remember Kamala, oh, it's a cloud. It's kind of up there. No, it's not up there. It's not anywhere beyond understanding. All the cloud means is you're on somebody else's computer, which means they control your data. They can sell your data. They can steal your data. They can be a security risk for your data, and they can block you from accessing your data. None of that's good. Check out Start9 today. Remember, you can save 9% on all of the Start9 servers if you're a member of the MSB. And sorry for a little derail there for a minute, man. I got something in my throat. That was not fun. It almost felt like I swallowed something and stuck in it. I haven't had anything to eat for quite a while. Anyway, enough of my problems. Let's talk about another problem we seem to have out there. And that is, you know, I don't care about people hearing this message who've been in Bitcoin a while and know what they know and know why they know what they know and know what they want to do with their lives. I really worry about this for brand new people to Bitcoin, because brand new people to Bitcoin are just very susceptible to being told to do something. And like, if they don't think they do the thing that they're told to do, then it won't work or something like that. But there is this huge compulsion by a lot of people that call themselves Bitcoin maxis that we need to be spending Bitcoin. And I'm here to tell you, no, you don't. I don't have a problem with someone spending Bitcoin if they're fully aware of what they're doing and why they're doing it, because it's your money and you should do what you want to with it. I do have a big problem with somebody who has a predisposition to be smart and like, my Bitcoin is for my future and I don't want to spend it, and then be led toward like some sort of need, some sort of either moral, ethical, or some sort of a need. You must spend your Bitcoin. And Bitcoin can't succeed if we don't spend it. Bitcoin trades in the billions of dollars a day. We don't need people to spend Bitcoin to make it successful. A lot of these people will point back to the to get off the ground, it was necessary for people to use it. It really was. Like, people had to see a utility in it. What can it do? And it worked for that in the early days, because people were buying things and they would spend the Bitcoin because they weren't really worried about where it would be tomorrow. We didn't know what it was going to be yet. It wasn't a safe, secure investment. It was a risky investment. And you could buy things with it from people who would sell it to you. But the reason they would take Bitcoin is because they knew, especially once we had some exchanges set up, like the one that failed, of course, Mt. Gox, I could then take Bitcoin and turn it into something else, like dollars, right? And then I could accept it because it was just another sale. Or I could use it to buy something else. And that seemed like it was a good thing for Bitcoin, and initially it was. But something's happened. In the world of Bitcoin, we then got crypto, right? Crypto bro, right? And then all these like 500 gazillion different versions came out, and everybody was competing for something. And that was to be the best payment method. And yet, even though we do have cryptos that are faster and less expensive than Bitcoin, Bitcoin's still the king. And here's the reason. No one gives a fuck that it's a method of payment at this point in the arc. Let me say it again. In reality, except for certain people who are special, no one gives a fuck. And when I say no one, I mean less than 0.25% of the people in the world give a flying fiddler's fart, okay, about using crypto as a payment method, especially outside the world of stable coins. No one cares. And the reality is no one wants to take it. Now, I know you who sell hot sauce you make in the backseat of your pickup truck, or the moonshine that you make in your garage, or the peppers you grew in your backyard, or the sauerkraut you made, or whatever that you want to sell to your, yeah, you'll take it. That's not what I mean. I mean, when it really comes down to it, nobody wants to take Bitcoin as a form of payment in the day-to-day things that we pay our bills with. And so somebody said, well, you can use BillPay at Strike or BillPay with River, which means that the person you're paying with Bitcoin doesn't want it. Now, it's important to understand why they don't want it. It's not that they don't want it because it's not a great asset, because it is. Okay, if I was going to give you a brand new or a classic Mustang, you'd probably take it, right? Like, it's a car. It's cool. I'll take it. But you don't want it as a form of payment. You don't want it as a form of payment. That's a lot easier for me to send you $100 worth of Bitcoin than to send you a car. But companies don't want it. And until we can accept that companies don't want it as a form of payment, we're going to keep deluding ourselves into the fact that we need to spend it. Let me explain why companies don't want it. It has nothing to do with Bitcoin in and of itself. It's the reality of business. And most of these special people screaming at you and shrieking, we need to spend it. You know what? You spend your own shit. Don't worry about what people do with any of their other money. Dollars, Bitcoin, freaking space credits. I don't give a shit. Freaking Federation credits with a thumbprint. You don't need to worry about what other people do with their money. We do not have a lack of spending problem in the Western world today, let alone the United States. We have a lack of fucking savings. Tax implications is being said in the chat. It is a piece of it. It is not the bigger problem. The people saying, you have to spend it. These companies should be taking it. Why would they take it? You know what these people have never done? They've never run a fucking business with a supply chain and or a payroll attached to it. I used to run a business as the COO in partnership with Neil Franklin. We had 25 payroll in the millions of dollars per month, right? I mean, more than $1 million a week in payroll we're running. Just payroll. Just payroll. Okay, at least we didn't have a real supply chain issue there. We had to buy paper and shit like that, but, you know, it may be some office equipment, all the small, by the way, you know, 2,500 contractors, 50 employees. That's small business in this world. You know, if the world where you're buying shit online from Amazon and all, they do more business in an hour than we did in a year. And they have a supply chain to deal with. In other words, I'm building a widget and the widget is made of 18 different parts. And I have to secure the parts from my supply chain. I have to assemble them. I have to pay labor and I have to spend that money back out. Now I'm taking Bitcoin. Bitcoin's volatile. Well, when it goes up, woohoo. Well, what happens when it goes down? Now, if you're following the Michael Saylor model, which is you take surplus capital that we don't need anytime soon and we sweep it into Bitcoin, this works perfectly. This is fine. But it'll go up, whatever. No, you don't understand. These fucking businesses are taking in revenue today that they have to Monday, today, this Monday. Friday, they have to make payroll out of that money. Now, they took Bitcoin and the value of that Bitcoin went down 7% this week. What do you say when the value of Bitcoin goes down over 7% across a week? If you're smart, you don't care as an individual holder. You don't care. It doesn't matter to you. You do not give a fuck. You're like, great, when I DCA today, I'll pay 7% less for my buy. Woohoo. Yeah. If I have to make payroll out of that money, I'm on my way to fucking bankruptcy. Tell them what they've won, Tim. They've won a trip to bankruptcy court where their whole business will be dissolved and distributed to their fucking creditors because they were stupid. So what we have, all these people saying you should use Bitcoin to pay your bills, and you take something like Strike and you have your direct deposit made there and it all goes into Bitcoin instantly and you pay your bills throughout the month. And when you pay your bills with Strike using Strike Bill Pay, the other side will receive dollars. So what's the fucking point? You've done something just to spite the system that the system doesn't care about. You're not even a skid mark in the underpants of the dead guy from the system from 50 years ago. No one cares. All you've done is created a tax nightmare for yourself, a big long thing that Strike will give you to figure out how much money you owe or deducted. But what you've done, I guarantee you, you will end your month and your year with less sats than if you had simply taken the approach of pay my fucking bills, take the surplus capital that I have available, sweep it into Bitcoin. You will. You will end up with less. You will end up with a headache. You will end up with a nightmare. And when you make it more, not less likely that the government might go, what's going on with all this cryptocurrency? Maybe this guy needs an audit. Don't think all the audits will go away just because Trump's here, right? There is no benefit to this. None. Zero. None. If you were going to do anything, you would be better off, and I'm probably going to set up an account with them this week using a company called River, where you can hold USD, and while you're holding USD, they pay you 3.5% on it in Bitcoin. Okay, this makes sense. And then you pay your bills with dollars and you sweep your surplus capital into freaking Bitcoin. That works too. But spending it just for the sake of spending it is dumb. Don't do this. There is no. Now, there is a case if Bill wants Bitcoin and you're brand new to Bitcoin, you make one or two transactions in Bitcoin to learn, to get empowered, to feel how it works, to realize you can do it. Great. But the reality is when you withdraw from an exchange, and you send the Bitcoin from the exchange to an address of your own wallet, you just figured out how to make a fucking payment with Bitcoin. You want to spend Bitcoin because Bill wants Bitcoin. Use something like Strike. I think River does this too, but I haven't used it yet, so I don't know. If you want Bitcoin, I will pay you Bitcoin. I have no problem paying you Bitcoin, but I'm not going to sell one sat to do it. I'll go to my US dollar balance in Strike. And if I need more in there, I'll say transfer from bank account. Boom. It's instant, right? And then I'll send you Bitcoin. I'll send you Bitcoin. But I'll send dollars. You'll get Bitcoin. I'm fine doing that. And if that makes you happy, do it. But if you even have a company that says they'll take Bitcoin, and it's like for your electric bill or something, I don't know, you got a little co-op that says, yeah, we'll take Bitcoin, whatever. They're not taking it. They're immediately converting it to dollars. You're not accomplishing anything. Now, notice how I said almost always stupid. So I've had people, but what if I'm going to buy a house? What if I'm going to buy a house? Well, it depends. It depends. Is it your only way to buy a house, or have you convinced yourself it's the only way to buy a house? And how much money do you have? Let's say somebody has like $500,000 in Bitcoin right now, and they need $50,000 for to get a loan approved for a conventional mortgage to buy a house. Or they can go buy the house for $400,000. If they sell $400,000 worth of Bitcoin and buy the house for cash and say, now we don't have a house payment. That was stupid. You could finance the house at 7%, and Bitcoin has an annualized rate of return of around 200% over 10 years. Cut it in half, it's 100%. Cut it in half again, it's 50%. All of the answers are that was dumb. Person cannot get, legitimately cannot get a mortgage. All their reserve capital is held in Bitcoin. They sell $50,000 worth of Bitcoin for the down payment and maybe some things that you need when you become a new homeowner. They still have $450,000 worth of Bitcoin. It's probably a good decision, especially if they are moving into a more advantageous position by no longer being a renter, if that's the case. Because people say that, like, you're better off buying than renting. Maybe. Not always. Now, there's a reason that people who could buy don't. Right? There's a reason that people who could buy a house actually would have no trouble doing it don't. You have to find the right house, right situation, right place in your life, all those things. If they align and you literally don't have, because you've always swept 100% of your reserve capital into Bitcoin, okay, fine. Fine. But in general, the best thing to do is buy it and never sell. Don't care. Always buying, always holding, never selling. Now, never is, again, one of those things that we say that word and we don't really think about absolutism with it. When you retire, when you're worth $100 million, you want to spend $1 million, 1% of your money, I don't care. But this, like, this compulsion, I need to make my car payment in Bitcoin, you're just being retarded. I'm sorry. And I'm going to move on because we spent way too much time on that. All right, so here's a question for you. Do people invent problems because they don't have any problems and it makes them bored? And before I tell the story where the word bored comes from, is it actually a survival instinct? I want you to think about this, and we'll talk about it more in a second, but humans evolved in scarcity. We did. If you didn't pay attention to that thing moving in the bush over there, it ate you. If you didn't learn how to hunt eventually when you got big enough and you got kicked out of the clan, had to go make your own way, you starved, right? And even when you were in the clan and in the tribe or whatever, if you didn't find enough stuff, you died. The whole clan could get wiped out. An illness could come, or a problem could come and wipe everybody out and or leave 10%, and then you went from somewhat organized to completely like wandering aimlessly and trying to reconstitute humanity. Okay? Do we need some level of struggle in our lives to be happy? And is it so ingrained that we can't turn it off? So here's where the story comes from. There's a guy I follow on X, and he's from Mongolia. And last year, toward, you know, Christmas this time, I guess, he went to visit his family in Mongolia. And he's talking to his father. Now, his father is indigenous Mongolian, up in the steppe, like dude's literally living in a yurt, riding horses, sending falcons out to kill shit, killing sheep, cooking them in a fire with stones in their belly. Like, that's this guy, right? And he said he was explaining to his father some of the problems that we have in America, or some of the people that we have in America that think they have a problem, like the people that think they're women when they're not, or people that want you to address them by their proper pronouns, and some other various kind of left-wing lunatic shit. He said his father is a very contemplative man, so he didn't instantly answer. Like, this is something, if you think about this, you live in a world isolated, you've never heard of this before. This is something that's kind of like, what the fuck is going on? And if you're a contemplative person, before you open your mouth, you're quiet, you think. So he said his father thinks for a minute. He nods his head and goes, oh, I see. I see what's going on. The kid's like, well, you know, kid, he's a freaking 35-year-old man. Yeah, dad, tell me what's going on. He goes, these people are bored. They have no real problems. They're not worried about where they're going to get their next meal from. They don't have any actual problems. And because they don't have any actual problems, they're inventing problems because they're bored. I've repeated that a bunch of times since I first read his account of that. But I think it's even bigger than that. Now, I know you're going to say we have plenty of problems in America, but no, America macro has problems. A lot of individuals, if you think about some of the individuals that are the most lunatic about this stuff, they don't really have problems. I mean, the most vocal group of them, we all know who it is. It's wealthy, white, suburban women. These are the people with the least problems of any demographic on the planet. Wealthy, white, suburban women. A lot of, like we talk about, you know, two family households and all. A lot of these people don't even work. They're married to some guy that's knocking back three or four bills a year. They shop for, I've seen them, right? You see them all the time. If you go out during the day when normal people have a job and you go to expensive stores, you'll see lots of them. Like that their job is to shop and remodel the house once a year. Okay? They're the most vocal, and they're the ones with the most problems. Now, here's what brought this up today. I saw this posted also on X, and I found it very interesting. Global antidepressant users per 1,000 people. Korea might have some problems there. 13 people out of 1,000 people in Korea use antidepressants. Chile, lots of problems in Chile. Lots of real problems in Chile. 13 out of 1,000. Estonia, 18 out of 1,000. Hungary, 27 out of 1,000. The Slovak Republic, 31 out of 1,000. You get it. Okay. Now, the United States of America, 110 out of 1,000. That's 11% of people in the United States are depressed enough to be on antidepressant drugs. This, of course, leaves out all the people that are self-medicating for their depression. But, you know, companies that are making shit like Vraylar, right? They're making a fortune on people being depressed. What are you depressed about? Now, look, I know there's somebody out there that's going to listen to me today, and either you or someone you love is clinically depressed, and you think I'm making fun of it. I'm not. What I'm saying is those 11 out of 1,000, not all of them are that person. Most of them, I believe, are not. Doctors about 30 to 40 years ago started handing out antidepressants like they were M&Ms. You could actually go back into the 70s, the 60s, and the 50s. And you know who they were mostly handed out to back then? Rich white women. But really, it was like the late 70s Florida. They just like started throwing, like doctors are like writing prescriptions and throwing them out their window into the window of cars next to them, right? Like just crazy levels of these drugs being prescribed. It doesn't hurt that really hot looking girls and GQ looking guys are going to all the medical offices pushing this shit. But the reality is we're pushing a product that has a demand. I'm depressed. I'm not completely happy. I'm not happy, so therefore I must have some need to be happy. And again, I'm not putting down people that are actually experiencing clinical depression, especially if they are in there's something biochemically causing it. I get it, okay? But again, I'm saying 90% of the people on these drugs aren't. They're not. Why do they feel that they need a drug? You know, this makes me think of another story. There was a rabbi I was listening to, and he on YouTube, and he was talking about how if humans were like lobsters, we would never grow. Because a lobster will grow to a certain point, and it literally fills its shell. It becomes very uncomfortable. And to grow to the next size, it has to do something that's really dangerous for a lobster to do. See, lobsters will eat anything, including each other, but that hard shell is what keeps them from eating each other. So when a lobster or a crab or a crayfish or any kind of crustacean like this gets to a certain size, they literally have to go hide somewhere and be extremely uncomfortable, and eventually the shell splits, and the lobster casts off its shell, and it's for like another day or two, it's soft shell, like a soft shell crab. And not just other lobsters, but anything, including many things that would never eat a lobster with a hard shell, can eat the lobster. It's very vulnerable. And then its shell hardens and it can go on and grow to its next stage. But what he said is if lobsters were like humans, when they got to that, be like, I don't want to do this. This is uncomfortable and dangerous. So they'd go to a lobster doctor who would give them a drug and make them comfortable and stop the process and we wouldn't grow. This is what's going on. But I think it's deeper. And I'm interested in what you guys think. I think we need struggle. And I don't know if struggle is the right word. We need challenge in our life. We need to be challenged. I think this is like, why do people become so addicted to video games? I know we like to make fun of young guys playing video games and stuff when they should be out working. Yeah, I'm all for it. Like, put your shit down and go work. I get it. But everybody that's played video games knows you can get into that mode of like, just one more. What happens if you win? Nothing. What do you get? Nothing. What comes from it? Nothing. But you're challenged. Think of how many hobbies challenge you. Whether it's like direct, serious challenge, like rock climbing is a challenge, or hiking, like long distance hiking or something is a challenge. Weightlifting, yes, you do get the physical condition, but aren't you always trying to push yourself to that next level in it? How many things are there that we do that's like one more? Fishing, one more cast, because that one more cast. And yes, I want to catch the fish, but it's also about catching the fish. It's about the process. It's about the challenge. It's the innate primal urge to feed oneself, hunting, etc. Like you could, if you just want a dead animal, there's a lot of ways to get a dead animal to eat that doesn't involve going up and down mountains that have freaking 40 degree angles. And hiking into the backcountry, and after you shoot one, having to pack it out in three or four pack outs, like I did one time with an elk because I was by myself. It took me 4 trips to get this animal out. It was only about a mile each time. Well, 2, one in, one out. It was very challenging. Why do we seek this? I think we need it. I think we innately need it. And the more comfortable we become, the more unhappy we become, and the more we create something in it for ourselves as a problem so that we feel like we're doing what we're supposed to do. But when it comes to things like this, I think we end up really hurting ourselves. We start coming up with the idea that since I'm unhappy, maybe it's because I'm actually a woman. Since I'm unhappy, maybe it's because, I don't know, fill in the blank. And I'm wondering how many things there are like that, that we have literally created a problem for ourselves because we have a compulsion that we must be challenged. And if that's the case, then the solution to a lot of this depression, right, would actually be to create challenges that are worthy of being taken, worthy of being solved. And again, I know there are, I'm going to hear it no matter how hard I try. So I should stop bothering. I'm going to hear, I've struggled this for 20 years. And here's the truth. When you send me that email, I have no way to know whether you're somebody that legitimately has some sort of chemical imbalance or something like that that caused this, a true illness, or you're the exact person. There's no way I can know that. And nothing you say will ever convey it to me in a way where I can know it, because I don't know you and I won't pretend that I do. So I won't judge you, but you won't alter my opinion with an email like that. And my opinion is simply that the first thing we should try with people who are going through these sort of problems, emotional and mental troubles, is diet and exercise, and saying, what do you find interesting? How can we challenge you? How can we create a problem for you that is worthy that you solved it? And a challenge that if you solve the problem, you will actually gain from it. It will actually do something for you. And I think there is a, there's a more to this. I think this is also why like young people join the climate cult, right? The climate cult, that you only have 10 years to act. And then you feel like you're like this crusader. Project Walden says, I call it slaying dragons because dragons don't exist. That's exactly what I'm saying. And so that person needs something to be a champion of. So to be a champion of this. And the reason the climate cult only goes so far and just keeps collapsing, because when you tell somebody that's 18 years old, you only have 10 years to act. 10 years later, when they're 28 and you say it again, a certain portion of them go, wait, what? And if, when they're 20 years into 10 years to act and you say it again, the number keeps fading as people age because, well, I've seen this before. And I think there is a lot of that in our world today where people are creating these absolutely ridiculous problems because instead of creating a constructive challenge for themselves, they're embracing a trendy problem, right? I'm concerned about the plight of trans kids. Do you notice that nobody gave two fucks about the plight of trans kids 15 years ago? Because it's not a thing. It's not a problem. We are making a problem out of it. We are putting shit into these kids' heads. We've gone from 1/10 of 1% of children struggling with this thing to having 4 or 5% of kids claiming to be non-binary or trans or some shit. We made that happen. And so the problem with it is when you do it to yourself, it's one thing. When you start ginning it up and doing it to others, it's another problem altogether. And then the people that run the whole fucking world go, oh, I see what's going on. Let's agitate this shit. Let's review one of Jack Spirico's sales formulas he used to teach people before. It's called the cash formula. This is how it works. You want to sell something, create a problem, agitate the problem, solve the problem, help the person implement the solution. You'll sell more than you know what to do with. You do with a TV. Hey, you thinking about watching the Super Bowl a couple weeks from now? How's your TV? Oh, it's kind of not the greatest TV. Look at this 70-inch fucker we have back here. They're cheap now. Oh, you can't afford it? Let me solve the problem. There's the TV. Let me help you. We have easy financing. Okay, you can do that by selling somebody a ridiculous idea too. And I think that's the world that we're stuck in today. I really do. Let's move on, though, so we don't spend too much. Eggs. Eggs are scarce. It's Orange Man's fault. That's the latest thing. It's amazing to me how absolutely stupid that some people are. But let's not worry about it being Orange Man right now. Let's just worry about, well, what's actually going on? What is the reason for the egg shortage? So the TV says that the egg shortage is because bird flu came. So some crow flew across the Pacific Ocean from China. I know crows don't do that. Just relax. So some birds flew across the ocean from China. They brought the bird flu with them. They took a shit in San Francisco, and it migrated to Minneapolis, Minnesota. And then the bird in Minneapolis, Minnesota got the bird flu. And now we have to kill all the chickens. There's the problem. Imagine we did that with people. That one guy gets the flu in an apartment complex, kill the whole apartment complex. I mean, it's literally how they're reacting to this. And so almost no chickens are dying from this. They're being killed. And they are killing chickens when, like, random samples are being taken. Like, we're going to go test like 100 chickens out of this laying house today. And we found two with bird flu according to a test. No symptoms. They kill it. Now, you might think like a chicken farmer, right, an egg farmer would be like, hey, no, and have some resistance. But why do people go into business? Let's just put the chicken thing aside for a second. All your emotions about diseases and shit like that, all your invented problems. Just a simple question. Why do people go into business? Let's do multiple choice. They do it A, because their teacher told them to. B, because it's nice to give people jobs. C, because they want to make the world a better place where everybody colors with crayons. Or D, they go into business to make money. There it is, right there, to make money. Holy crap. Legacy Farm says 25% of Gen Z is LGBTQ identifying, not 5. It's way worse. Yeah, I don't even believe that, though. I think that's when they're asked the question and they want to sound cool. Like, I think if you just look at Gen Z, they're not. There's not 1 in 4 walking around, you know, dressed like a he-she. It's just not a thing. Anyway, but Project Wallen, answer the question, to make money. So people go in business to make money. So if they can make money doing less work, they'll do it. So what I have on your screen right now is how much different companies have been paid to murder their chickens. Jennie-O has been paid $74 million. Rembrandt Enterprises, $27 million. Sunrise Farms, $25 million. MG Walbum Company, $25 million. Tyson Foods, $24 million. Opal Eggs, $21 million. Hillandale Farms, Ohio, $20 million. Pittman Family Farms, $18 million. And it keeps going. The lowest number on this list is Melrose Associates out of Minnesota, $3.6 million. The way this works, I don't want to mislead you because that's not me. It's not what I do. It's not like, hey, here's some money if you kill your chickens. The government put a program in place that says, well, if we make you kill your chickens, well, we have to pay you for them. So they came up with a dollar value. How much is the hen worth? Where do you think that number comes from? Do you think they're like, let's check Craigslist to see how much a chicken costs? No, they're taking the average age of a production bird across its 18 months of primary production, and they're saying that's its value in eggs. And not the value that the guy gets paid for the egg, but the combined value of what he gets paid for the egg by the market and the subsidy he gets from the government. And they're saying if you lost a 10,000 chickens times that number, here's a check for $1.1 million. That's what they're doing. Now, if I'm a chicken farmer, right, and I'm not like you guys and I are, where I am a duck farmer and we do chickens too, and we produce eggs, like, you could offer to pay me $40 a bird to kill my birds. I'm not doing it. It sets me too far back. But if I'm doing it to make a living, like this is how I'm going to pay for my spoiled ass little girl to go to college and become one of these people with a problem that we talked about earlier. Then I don't care. I don't care how I get my money. So I can lay off all my people because I don't have any birds for the next 22 weeks for this purpose. Get the money and cut my expenses and keep the money. Yeah, I think I'm going to do that. That's what's going on. There is no need to be wiping out these entire flocks of birds. In fact, we should be looking for birds that don't die. Isn't this just the chestnut blight all over again? You know, if you go back in time, there was a time when we had chestnuts everywhere in the United States. There were chestnuts that were as big around in the trunk as like redwoods and sequoias. You can find pictures of old loggers standing on stumps, like 10 guys standing on top of the stump, and there's plenty of room for more people. Where'd they all go? Well, we got Chinese chestnut brought into the country. It spread something called chestnut blight, which Chinese chestnuts are immune to. And instead of leaving the chestnuts alone, to save the chestnuts, we cut them all down. And we literally went on like an obliteration goal. No chestnut left standing. We cut them all down. It's probably the case, had we not done that, that, you know, some of the chestnuts would have been resistant to the blight, and they would have natively crossed with some of the invading Chinese chestnuts, and we would have had a complete rebirth of the chestnuts in the country. But no, we killed them all. This is the same thing we're doing here. Instead of letting nature take its course, we're preventing natural selection. We're preventing natural selection. You're not going to get the bird flu because you ate an egg. This is stupid. This is more of the war on meat and other animal-derived products is what this really is. And I'm sorry. It just is. Anyway, let's yeah. There's over $1 billion when you add up that whole list that has been spent to pay people to kill chickens and then cry about the price of eggs. This is a perfect reason you should be keeping your own birds. Keep that in mind for a later topic today. Let's talk about something else. How about past boom and bust cycles? Remember I asked you to like think about it. So I'll ask you guys now on the live stream. Think of things that went through boom and bust cycles and not necessarily things that went away. So let's look at the dot-com boom. Some of y'all are too fucking young to remember the dot-com boom, like 98, 99 up to 2000, right? So they really started to hit hard about 96 is when it started to really take off. People were getting discs in the mail and installing this free software and turning your computer on and hearing, beep, boom, beep, because there was no DSL yet, right? You've got mail. And it was AOL. Everybody had AOL. People thought AOL was the internet, right? And all these companies came out. They're going to be the online version of. And they're like, they were printing stock like toilet paper and handing it out like toilet paper. It was like a crypto boom before there was crypto. You found a dot-com company. There's never a time in history it was easier to go public with a company that didn't do anything, that was going to do something eventually. Then you got, or even if you didn't go public, you had a private company and you issued, you know, 20 million shares of stock and you promised people that when we go public, your stock will convert. And they were literally paying employees and giving them bonuses and bringing in top talent with printed fucking stock that was bullshit. And everybody was a success. If you had a dot-com company that was just considered part of this whole thing and you got it into a public offering, if you got it into the S&P, your stock exploded overnight. You went from being nobody to a billionaire overnight. And there were many companies that sprung up from nothing. I'm trying to think of the world something or whatever. This guy that was like nobody became like a billionaire and then went back to nobody and just disappeared. WorldNet or something like that, right? And nobody even knew what it did. And that cycle went through. Yeah? Okay, now think about this. How about cannabis? Cannabis. A lot of people didn't even notice this, but I said it would happen and it did. We had the Farm Bill come through and we legalized hemp-derived cannabis. And now there is hemp in everything. And you would say, well, it was a success. It was still a boom, glut, bust. Everybody that could in the space started growing cannabis. I'm going to grow cannabis. I'm going to make more money. I can make a hell of a lot more money growing cannabis than tomatoes. Until we pushed the supply side so high that it commoditized itself and began to drive the price back down. And hundreds of companies that were going to be the next big thing in cannabis, the next, like the R.J. Reynolds of cannabis, just died and went away. Now, the thing didn't die and go away because I'm about to apply this to AI, and I don't want people to take it the wrong way. The dot-com boom was an essential part of creating the internet that we have today, but there was a boom-bust cycle within it, and the majority of the companies did not survive the cycle. A handful came out the other side, right? Google, even I would say MySpace didn't survive the cycle, right? Who the fuck uses MySpace, right? And like, you know, 10 people that do it because you're a nerd or something. Like, it's not a Twitter X, right? It's not a Facebook. It's not an Instagram. It's not a TikTok. Some of those came out well past that cycle after the space was mature. But how many, you know, they're going to be the next huge thing. Boom, bust, nothing, gone. But we're still left with the good. So that's what I'm saying is about to happen to AI. AI is something that anybody can do. I know you want to believe that they can't, but any company with a significant amount of startup capital, which is easy to acquire if you are a tech company already, can get an AI. Every tech company is going to get involved in AI. And Apple will integrate Apple intelligence into your OS if you're an Apple user. Microsoft will, you know, integrate Microsoft or Windows or whatever intelligence. Like, that's all going to happen. Elon is developing Grok for X. Facebook has its own AI shit it's doing. They're less what I'm talking about because in the end, whether it's what they develop for themselves or something they co-opt from somebody else, they'll use it. The boom I'm talking about, though, the boom bust cycle, is all the companies that are going to jump in, and we're going to make the AI that slices, dices, and bakes, and we're going to make the AI that develops the recipe, and we're going to make the AI that makes Joe Biden sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger, and we're going to make, like, that's, it's just going to be tons and tons of shit, and it's going to be the next stock market boom. It's going to be massive. It's going to make the dot-com boom look like a fucking joke. And then you know what it's going to do? It's going to make the dot-com bust look like a fucking joke. Imagine 100 Enrons. It won't really be that because they'll never get as big, but it will feel like it. That's what it'll be called or something similar. It's coming. It will happen. Just know that I've said it. Not so I can say, look, I said it, but because you're going to get all kinds of basically begging you to throw your money at things coming very, very soon. And there will be a lot of money made by investing in the AI space, but most of it will not be winners. Most of it will be losers. The investing market, when it comes to these speculative investments of non-established companies, is a lot like a casino, like shitcoining, right? Yeah, you can make a lot of money, but you probably won't. And if you're going to make money in it, when you're going to make money is going to be like, the IPO will go out. Tell me how many times you've seen this out. The IPO goes out for a thing, right? And it explodes on the date, and then like 3 or 4 days after the IPO, it comes way down. And that's when people don't buy. And that's when you should buy. And then the news cycle and the overall sector cycle will drive it up. And that's when everybody gets greedy and everybody FOMOs in and holds because it's going to be worth more tomorrow. And then the bottom falls out and everybody loses. It's like going to Caesar's Palace, right? Like the house will never lose, but you will. It's coming. It's coming. Next, let's talk about Orange Man again. Columbia cried uncle to Orange Man in about an hour. So here, if you haven't heard this yet, here's the basics of what happened. The Orange Man loaded up two plane loads of people to go back to Columbia. These people were not just like a guy standing around at the Home Depot parking lot waiting for day labor work. These are people who were convicted of like fucking felonies. And so they said like, let's get them together. Let's get them the fuck out of here. So they put them on some planes and they flew them to Colombia. And the Colombian government denied them the ability to land. Said, you do not have permission to land. Go home. You cannot bring these people here. And, you know, you're not going to send in a couple F-35s to, like, bomb Bogota so that you can land a fucking plane full of immigrants. So they bring them back to the States, and Trump says, okay, fine. We are going to put a tariff immediately on Colombia of 25% on all goods brought in from Colombia by the end of the week. And another week goes by, if it's still going on, we'll double it to 50%. And we're going to put sanctions on all the government officials. We're gonna take all visas from Colombian officials coming into the United States. So if you're a Colombian governmental person and you want to come to the United States, your visa's pulled, and some other things. And the left immediately lost their mind. You're not going to be able to afford coffee anymore, and you won't be able to afford cut flowers because the number two export of Colombia to the United States is cut flowers. Apparently, we can't grow fucking roses and carnations in America anymore. And I don't really get that, by the way. Like, I see that as an opportunity to start doing more flower-growing businesses in the United States because I cannot believe that a flower that was cut travels well to the United States from Colombia. It comes into some importation facility, and then finally gets to like an Albertsons where you buy it for your wife. I can't see this being something we can't do in America. I can't see it as being something that's not highly profitable in America, and I can't see where we can't produce a better product, but whatever. So I'm like, whatever. If this takes a few weeks, I don't give a shit. We're more important to Colombia than Colombia is to us. And by the way, we get coffee. I can't even think of the last time I specifically bought a coffee that was Colombian. I buy coffee from all over the fucking world, right? I mean, there's some great coffees other than in Colombia. Well, the Colombian president said, yeah, bullshit, we're going to tariff you back. And Orange Man said, go ahead. So an hour later, roughly, the president of Colombia said, you know what? we were kidding, changed our minds. And not only, you know, dude, we inconvenienced you. We'll send our own plane to get them so you don't have to pay for the gas. And we'll take them. And what's going to happen now is anytime we have another truckload of or plane load of people that need to take their ass back to Columbia, Columbia is going to freaking take them. And I want to explain something about this that I shouldn't have to explain, but I know for some people I do. And it's not necessarily the left I have to explain this to. Well, it's not only the left. It's also special libertarians. The idea that any country would say you can't deport a person to the country that they're from is insane. I want you to reverse it for a second. You go to Mexico. You go to Mexico. And Mexico says you're here illegally. And you say, I didn't know. I'm sorry. I didn't know. You did something wrong. You filled a form out, whatever it is. And they arrest your ass. They throw you in Mexico jail. Place you don't want to be. And you're like, well, shit. How long am I going to be here? They go, no problem. We're gonna deport you back to the United States. And you go, just let me go and I'll leave. No. You're in jail now. You have to be deported. Well, how long is that going to take? Well, we're willing to do it tomorrow. And your government says, we don't want them back. Aren't you sitting here going, wait, hold on a fucking second. I'm an American citizen. I have an American ID. I have an American birth certificate. I have every right to go to America because I live there. What Colombia says, we won't allow you to deport illegal immigrants from the United States back to Colombia who are either Colombian citizens or Colombian nationals. How is it different? Now, if we just rounded random people up who weren't from Colombia and said, hey, we don't want these people anymore here, Colombia, right? Which Orange Man may try to make happen in Gaza and force like Egypt or somebody. That's not happening, by the way, but that's wrong. Telling a country, here's your own citizen back. I don't understand. I don't get that. I don't know how you can say no. Like, if that person got on a plane by their own free will and flew to Colombia and got off the plane and said, here's my Colombian ID, come on. You know? Bienvenidos. How is America? Did you like it? I mean, like, they can go home anytime they want. It doesn't make any sense. So you might think, like, I'm rah-rahing this. Here's the problem with this. Trump is a fucking egomaniac. Now, I've said there's a lot of shit Trump does that I like, and there's a lot of shit I don't like. But overall, he does more I like than I don't. But he is – the thing that makes him good is the same thing that makes him bad. He doesn't fuck around. If he knows something needs to be done or he believes something needs to be done and he can do it, he just does it. Now, when he's doing things you like, that's good. But what if, don't worry about whether you like it or not. What if it's a mistake? What if you're making a mistake and you have somebody like that? As soon as the idea comes up, if that person's convinced it's the right thing, they just do it and they don't sanity check it. He's that guy. And that's why people love him, because he does get shit done. And anybody that says he doesn't get shit done has just Trump derangement syndrome, stage 5 terminal. The man has done more fucking shit, whether you like it or not, in 1 week as president than any president has ever done in 4 years, as far as I'm concerned, as far as meaningful things that happened already. And that's just EOs. He hasn't even started working with the legislature really yet. But the problem with Trump is not only does he just take action without second guessing it, is that it seems like whoever the last person to speak to him is, if they make a well-thought-out logical argument, that becomes his opinion. That's how it seems. When I look at all of the things that have changed over time, and a lot of times he eventually gets to the right place, but I think it's more that the person who was able to get him there finally got access to him. And I think he's open-minded and he'll listen to people, but I also think he can be steered in a direction that even he wouldn't go if he was fully informed. And any person in that position is never going to be fully informed or know who to trust about everything, because it's too much. It's an impossible job. And that's where there has to be some level of caution. Like, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to get five really smart people to tell me why I shouldn't do it. And then I'm going to get five really smart people to tell me why I shouldn't do it. I'm going to have them individually tell me. They all get 10 minutes each. That's it. And none of them get to talk to each other or even know who the other people are. That's the best you could do. And that takes 2 hours of your time. Probably takes 100 hours of other people's time to get those people. And you have to trust them to get you the right people. But even if it all goes right, what is 2 hours to a president? I have a hard time finding an hour in my day to accommodate something else. I can't imagine being the president of the United States. So this can backfire because now he's like, I've proved it works. Well, there's other countries that aren't Colombia. And they're going to go, well, fuck you. And maybe they FAFO, right? Maybe we FAFO with the wrong country, though. I do think he's smart enough to understand that you can't be this direct and over the head with somebody like Xi in China. Because to them, it's more about respect. It's more about honor. And they will never want to, no government wants to look weak in front of its people, period. But certain governments really can't afford to. Middle Eastern governments and Asian governments in particular, they cannot appear to have given in, even if they've given in. It's very important the way they create the appearance. They can't be like, we made a mistake here and we fixed. I mean, I know you don't usually hear that from our own government, but you see it. They don't want to even have it seen. They live in a totally different mental place than we do. Not just their governments, but their citizenry with this idea. And it's how they maintain control of their population. So if he does something like this to China, China will double down and he'll double down and they'll double down. And here's the difference. If we don't have another single thing come into the United States from Colombia for the next freaking year, nothing will really happen. Nothing will really happen. You will pay more for coffee, especially if you drink Folgers or something like that, right? But nothing will really, no one will die because of it. People will grumble and grice, but the same people are, you might be able to afford coffee. They're already going to Starbucks and paying $6.50 for a fucking milkshake, right? So I don't want to hear from those people. Nothing will really happen. If you piss off China enough, people will die, not from warfare. We can't make fucking antibiotics in this country without raw materials from China. We can't make rechargeable batteries without rare earth elements from China. We can't. And there's 100 other critical things in the supply chain that we either can't get at all or we can't get in sufficient quantities to keep everything running from China. And COVID showed us what some of that shit is. And we have not really done anything to correct that problem. I think Orange Man will put us on a track to correct. He loves Made in America, right? That's why he thinks he's going to make Bitcoin in America. No, if you're saying we're going to make Bitcoin in America, we're going to make crypto in America, you have no idea what crypto mining or Bitcoin mining is. Like, you can't possibly say that and actually understand it. He may understand it and know that it's still a good thing to say because most people are stupid. He is a pretty good politician. But there are certain things that we really should make in America. Raw materials for our critical drugs is one of them. Chips, microchips, processors, etc., for electronics is another one. For two reasons. One, otherwise you're held hostage to foreign entities. And right now, without South Korea, we'd have trouble making a 1980s Casio watch, just to be honest. Taiwan and South Korea are producing almost all the chips that we use in America. And there's ways that can be disrupted. We also do get some from China. But there's a lot of electronic components that go into very advanced technology in America that we're getting that are made in foreign countries, and even your friends will spy on you. I mean, we spied on Iceland. So why would we expect that maybe Malaysia or South Korea wouldn't spy on us? Because we're America? So when you have these critical electronic components, there can be things in them that allow back doors and things like that. So it's a security issue up front, and it's a security issue back end. And that's why we are, to be fair, really trying to like increase the production of microchips in the United States. But how many other things are there like that? So we can't go bullying China in this trade war. We can have a trade war with China, and we can come out ahead. But we have to limit how far we go. I'm not so worried about him going too far with China, but there may be some other countries he goes too far with. And you can't do it to everybody. And what's already happened is the president of Honduras, who is a total Marxist, by the way. I mean, a Marxist beyond what we call Marxist politics, like way more Marxist than Kamala Harris or Bernie Sanders, full on Marxist. The only thing that keeps Honduras from being a communist fucking hellhole, and it is kind of a hellhole in some ways, but there is enough of a form of government in Honduras that much like a president can't just be a dictator here, they can't do it there either. If she could, it would be full on communist freaking Soviet Union style 1980s. She's now calling for an emergency meeting of all the Caribbean and Central American leaders to get together and form a coalition against Trump. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. Again, you're back to people that need us more than we need them. But if you start building that coalition big enough, if that like ties into the BRICS nations, etc., Trump is just fucked up in the head enough to not recognize the threat. And to think I can just beat everybody into submission. It's not as easy as it would be in his head to do that. You're talking about just Russia and China. You're talking like a third of the global population. And all of these countries individually need us more than we need them. But how many have to coalesce together before that calculus changes? And so hopefully there is enough being said into the orange ear that he doesn't let this go too far to his head. Because, man, what I love about Trump, if he says he'll do something, he'll do it. What's bad about Trump is if he says he'll do something, he's going to do it. If there's any way to get it done anyway. Like, he lied about this. He's like, shut up. I don't have time for your TDS today. I just don't. You know what I mean. Like, he might say we were going to fix the ACA, and he didn't do it, but he tried to do it. And if there is a direct way to do it, he will do it. That's why when people are like, he's not going to free Ross, shut up, go away with your TDS. He's going to do it for no reason other than he can, and he said publicly he would. Like, to him, to not do a thing he said he's going to do, if he could do it with a stroke of a pen, is like a shame. He would be shamed by that. Not because he's such a great guy. Don't take that wrong. Because that's his bravado. That's his personality. That's who he is. I said I would do it, and I did it. Everything in his life goes around that mindset. That's why everything is about him. He's a narcissist, too. Like, narcissists can be useful in certain situations. But have you ever noticed, like, he's talking to somebody about some horrible thing that just happened, like a disaster in California, all of a sudden he's talking about his landslide election win? That's narcissistic. And if you love him and now you're mad at me, I don't care. It is. I don't care what amazing victory I had in an election. If I had run for president, I could have had a 1984 Ronald Reagan victory, and I wouldn't be talking about my election victory while I'm talking to people who had half their state burned out. I just wouldn't. Those two things would not go together for me, nor for most people. But for a narcissist, it's important. I know those guys in Vegas. They like me. They voted for me in a big, huge way, right? Like, it's always bombastic. And instead of understanding what that means and extrapolating it to other things, people won't, because they're, God forbid you say something that could be construed as positive about Orange Man. There's good and bad in all people. And this man, I'll say it, I know I'm going to have some very angry people in my audience over this, has done more good for this country this week than any president in the last 20 years has done over a year. Not just more stuff, more good. It doesn't mean it's all good. Oh, but moving on to what is good. So Trump said he's going to set up a strategic Bitcoin reserve. This is one of those things he won't just do. And the reason he won't just do it is he can't just do it. Trump can't say, I hereby direct the United States Treasury to put up a Bitcoin reserve in the amount of X and to continue to grow that reserve over the next 4 years, at least while I'm president, by Y. Can't do it. This actually requires a bill. This has to be done in the legislature. I've looked into it. I thought there were some backdoor ways to do it. I cannot find a backdoor way to do it. And there's certainly no way to do it without the legislature that the next president can't undo just as easily. That's the problem with all EOs. So if you're going to use an EO to do something, you better do it and ingrain it in a way where it will hurt the next president to take it away. Most people wouldn't notice the difference if there was a Bitcoin reserve or not. The United States government right now has a shitload of Bitcoin. Most of it they stole from Ross Ulbricht, by the way. So that could just be moved over, and there's no effect on the market directly. So there was never going to be a EO for an SBR, a Strategic Bitcoin Reserve. Not going to happen. The Fed would have to have an act of Congress for them to start doing it under the direction of the government. The Fed could do it independently. Make no mistake about that. The Federal Reserve itself could make it. They won't, but they could make a decision that we're going to add Bitcoin to the central bank balance sheet, and they can do it. They can act independently and do it. But they can't be directed to do it without the legislature. The Treasury Department, which is different from the Federal Reserve for people that never learned that, I can't go into it today, but the Federal Reserve is a private entity oversaw by government. The U.S. Treasury is a department of the government. Either of those to be ordered by the Fed, like by Trump and his administration, to do this needs a bill to go along with it. Cynthia Lummis is the one that is pushing that bill, and that bill is a Bitcoin Strategic Reserve bill with some other things in it that are also good for crypto. That's where we are. So the president did sign an EO that doesn't really do as much as you think it does, but it does a lot of things most people aren't even talking about or understanding. So it creates a working group, and we all know how powerful working groups are in government, right? To explore how to make the United States the global leader in cryptocurrencies. Okay, I'm a Bitcoin-only guy. I believe everything but Bitcoin is a shitcoin with limited use cases for stable coins, and I'll get to that in a second because they play a key role in this, and then maybe something like a Monero for private transactions. But otherwise, like as far as what you buy and hold money in, it's Bitcoin-only. So I don't care about all the shit coins. But this is what, the autistic Maxis can't understand. If it's good for crypto, it's good for Bitcoin. I want you to think about it this way. The government of the United States tried to make Bitcoin go away through slander and malice and all kinds of shit that they pulled. Talking to banks, demonetizing banks so that they wouldn't enable crypto companies, like all kinds of shit, to prop the U.S. dollar up against Bitcoin. It failed miraculously. It failed miraculously. Bitcoin went from being worth a fraction of a penny in a decade and a half to being worth about $100,000. So the United States government, with all its power and money, was incapable of propping the most accepted currency in the world up against Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin maxis are worried about Ripple, a complete pre-mined, total piece of shit, garbage shit coin from a WEF partner. You're worried the dollar couldn't stand against if you're worried about Ripple because Orange Man uses the word crypto instead of Bitcoin. This is why I say they're autistic. So autistic people tend to be somewhat OCD. And once they decide on a thing, then everybody else should do it too. And if they don't, they get upset and angry and they lash out. Right? And I'm not talking about, you know, mentally challenged people here. I'm talking about like functional autism, which I put myself in that group. Maybe that's why I gravitated to Bitcoin, but I've reined myself in over the years. I don't talk about this a lot, but they used to call what we call functional autism or moderate or mild autism. It used to be called something else. It was called Asperger's. And it was on the autism spectrum, but it was looked at as a different set apart from full autism, which, by the way, it probably should be. It might be the same track, the same path, whatever, but it's not the same. I have a cousin named Robert. He's autistic. He's actually autistic. He has to have assistance in his life till the day that he dies. Autistic. He went to special schools as a kid. He did the whole rocking back and forth thing. Like he, you know, was what you think of when you think of autism. I'm not talking about that, so I don't offend anybody. I don't care if I offend you, but I care if I offend you because I was not careful enough to be clear in what I'm saying. I'm talking about people like myself. When I was a kid, I learned real quick that if you didn't look at people in the eye, they thought something was wrong with you. But I didn't want to look anybody in the eye, so I learned to like look at people's eyebrows, right? So I had these compensating methods, and I think a lot of these folks in this space never develop compensating mechanisms. And I've seen people like, since the thing that I say would work, I don't understand why everyone don't do it, and they keep pushing when nobody wants to hear them anymore. There was a guy here at a workshop one time, I don't want to beat up on too much, but he was there, like, edge of functional, right? And he wanted to do something that people didn't want him to do, and he thought it would help them, and he couldn't get in his head, nobody wants you to be asking to do this, and I don't want to go any further than that. It wasn't anything nasty. It was just putting his hands on them in a way that you might let somebody else do, not romantically, and they didn't want to be touched by a guy they didn't know, had not earned trust yet, and acted weird. And he couldn't understand it because, like, well, you're in, like, he was a masseuse, basically, right? And since in his head, I can make your pain go away, you should let me because I don't understand. Like, that kind of functionality is what's going on in some of these maxis heads, the Bitcoin maxis. So the new crypto EO is a win for Bitcoin in every way possible. So, of course, they're not happy because it's not exactly the way that they wanted it done. What they wanted was either the government to do nothing with Bitcoin or only do something with Bitcoin. So a crypto, now it's a crypto stockpile. Now it's a shitcoin stockpile. For those of you that are hearing this on social media, there is no stockpile. There is no reserve. The EO says nothing about it, but it paves the way for it. So said people outside of the EO. The text of the EO says nothing about a reserve. It says nothing about a stockpile, and if there were one, it doesn't say anything about including Ripple or any other shitcoin. Looking at what Don Jr. bought in his crypto meme coin bullshit friggin' rug pull scam does not tell you what the government's going to do, no matter how much somebody else wants that to be the case. So that's, it's like, do this thing and determine how we can be friendly to the industry so that people that want to build projects build them in the United States, including Bitcoin stuff. Okay, if you're a common sense Bitcoiner and you know you have the best money that man has ever come up with, the only thing you want is a level playing field. So saying we're not going to fuck with crypto is saying we're not going to fuck with Bitcoin. Yay, we win. So that's number one win in the order. Number two win in the order. Banks can now custody cryptocurrencies. Well, I don't want – you're supposed to be for self-custody. Calm your autistic ass down, please. What does that provide for? Well, what it provides for is bank accounts that have a checking account, a savings account, and a Bitcoin account in a bank. This is good for Bitcoin because more people will buy it if they can buy it through their bank that they trust. Whether they should trust the bank or not, I don't care. I don't have to trust the bank with my Bitcoin. I don't need that crutch. I'm not going to be lulled into that stupid decision. Fine. But the fact that other people will is fine with me because you should be. Right now, we have a hell of a lot more money sitting in banks in the form of dollars than will ever sit there in the next 5 years anyway in the form of Bitcoin. So I don't care. It's crypto friendly. It's Bitcoin friendly. It's don't fuck with it. It's okay to have it. That's all I'm asking for. Because look what Bitcoin did in about 15 years while it was being fought. Imagine what it can do if we just stop having it being fought. Very simple. But a lot of people are going to get hurt. People are going to get hurt financially anyway. People are stupid anyway. You don't care that they're going to get wiped out on the next Enron stock. Why do you care they're going to get wiped out by the next Dogecoin impersonator? It doesn't matter. It's false concern. It's fake. It's because you want what you want, so you create, just like the problems we started out with, a fictitious problem. Like the shitcoiners, again, their fictitious problem is people can't buy a scone and a coffee with Bitcoin. Well, yes, they can with Lightning, and through Strike, it's really easy to do, or other systems like that. But nobody wants to anyway, as we already covered. Where are these people? They don't exist. You fabricated them, right? When I had this conversation with Sal Mayweather, he's like, what about the poor person in Nigeria that can't afford to run a node? First of all, you don't have to run a node to do any of the things we're talking about. But second of all, you don't care about that person. You don't care about that person's ability. You're just creating a phantom to point at. You're tilting at a windmill. I don't care about that. But once the banks can custody Bitcoin, what does that enable? Has anybody jumped to this yet as to what that means? What's something we've always talked about being able to do with your Bitcoin? Borrow against it, right? And not these stupid loans that Coinbase is doing right now that aren't even – all Coinbase is earning is a riff on the back end of these loans. They're not even doing it. They have nothing to do with it. The Bitcoin loans that Coinbase are doing, you turn your Bitcoin – I talked about this last week – into what's called wrap Bitcoin. It basically means it captivates your Bitcoin onto the Ethereum chain and puts it in a smart contract. And then you borrow money against that And the counterparty has a claim to that if you don't service the loan. And when the loan is fulfilled, the Bitcoin is released back to you. That in and of itself isn't so bad. Variable interest rates that change by the minute between 9 and 20%, that's a problem. With terms, you pay it when you feel like it until you didn't pay it for long enough and they just take your Bitcoin away. Yeah. So that's not good either, right? But what I've always said, you should be able to go out and borrow money for lower than the rate against Bitcoin versus buying a house, because Bitcoin is pristine capital. Bitcoin is like borrowing money with cash backing. It's better, but it's like cash backing it. And so now that the bank, let's say Bank of America, can say, and I know that they're not going to be real happy about it, at least initially, but if anybody does it, everybody will do it. Well, I'll tell you what, Bill. You want to borrow $100,000 for whatever reason. At this point, with pristine collateral, I don't care. If you'll tie up $100,000 worth of Bitcoin in an account in our bank secured by a smart contract, we'll give you the loan for 5%. How long do I get to pay it back? How long do you want? We'll put it in a contract. 5 years, 10 years, 20. You want to buy a house? What are you doing? We don't really care, but what do you want? As long as it's reasonable, they're going to do it. Why? They can't lose. They can't lose. And because now that they can custody it, they can feel comfortable with the contract that says if you default, they take it. They basically foreclose instead of on the house. They foreclose on the collateral itself, which is the Bitcoin. Now, what can happen to a house over 10 years? Let's say I buy a house, $200,000 house. I go borrow $180,000 from the bank, and I put $20,000 for closing costs and down payment and all that. And the bank says, well, we have a house that appraised at $200,000. It will go up in value across time, and they owe $180,000, and I pay on it for like 10 years. Year 10, something goes wrong in my life, and my life goes in the toilet. I don't know, I get a meth habit or something. And I start not paying my bills. And it takes 6 months to 9 months to get me the fuck out of that house when I stop paying my bills. And maybe once in a while I scrape enough money to pay it for a month and I push it out. Maybe it takes you, I've seen people take a year to get evicted without making a payment, let alone a payment here and there. A year. How fucked up is that house going to be by the time they foreclose on it? And I'll tell you how fucked it is. I've been in some. I've been in foreclosed houses where somebody went and took knives and cut open the fucking drywall to pull the copper out. To pull the copper piping out, to pull the copper wire out. I've seen houses stripped almost to the studs on the inside. And nothing happens to that person. All the appliances are gone. I've seen cabinets taken out. Looking at houses that were in foreclosure. And I asked my realtor, what's going to happen to the person that did all this? Nothing. The house was the collateral. The cabinets weren't the collateral. Even if they were factored into the appraisal, it wasn't the collateral. The collateral was the real estate itself. That's it. So if I'm a bank and Jeff T here wants to borrow $100,000 from me on a house or $100,000 from me secured by $100,000 worth of Bitcoin, which is better for me as the banker? Well, the Bitcoin is. And Jeff says, so you give the bank your Bitcoin info with no FDIC guarantee. No, that would be the beauty of it. It would probably fall under FDIC as it would be a bank deposit. But it would be subject to the limitations of FDIC with total amount. So if you put like $10 million of Bitcoin in there to borrow $10 million, you wouldn't have FDIC on $10 million. But if it's done with a smart contract, the bank would not be able to exercise a claim on it early. As long it's an if this, then that smart contract. So as long as the debt is being serviced, and then there would be a contract that tells you what is the penalty for missing a payment? When do you have to put more Bitcoin in to keep the loan collateralized if it's not amortized enough against it? If it's a short term, see, like the loans right now are very short term. They're like margin in the stock market. And that's what all DeFi is being used for right now is a shitcoin casino. I have made a bunch of money. I got $100,000 worth of Bitcoin. I want to go buy $20,000 worth of shitcoin, but I don't want to sell my Bitcoin to do it. So I borrow against it. I trade the shitcoin, once I cash the profit in, I get my Bitcoin back and I never spend it. That's what they're doing. And, you know, if you can do it quick enough and it works and you're good, maybe you get away with it for a while. But sooner or later, well, you know, Bitcoin drops in price. Now you need to put more Bitcoin into the contract. If your shitcoin goes to hell at the same time and the whole crypto market kind of moves together, so down is down for all, crypto winter sucks for everybody, and everybody gets wiped out at the end of a cycle. It happens over, it's happened three times now. There's no reason to believe it's going to be different this time. But Michael Saylor says, when you're retiring, you got, you know, $10 million worth of Bitcoin, you never want to pay tax on it. You borrow 2 or 3% a year against it, and you use each loan to pay off the previous loan, and you do this until you die. There it is. I kept saying one day it will come. This is the first step in it coming. So there's nothing in this that's bad for Bitcoin, so of course the maxis are losing their mind. All right, RFK. RFK is one of the things I'm most excited about in the Trump administration. And there's a lot of people that don't understand that. He's terrible with guns. And as the head of HHS, he gets no say about guns. I said myself, about a year before the election, when people were going, RFK, man, RFK is going to be the Democrat nominee. One, you're stupid. Two, I would never want that man to be president. Three, if you made me president, I would make him a member of my cabinet. How am I supposed to sit here now and rail against? Like, somebody would put up a video of Jack Spirko saying that and go, what's up, Jack? That's what consistency is nice. You don't have to worry about that. Somebody goes and finds it now. All it does is prove I'm telling the truth. So what I said is I would put him either in charge of Health and Human Services, or I would put him over the EPA on a tight leash. If I put him over the EPA, I don't want to hear the word fucking carbon out of your mouth, Bobby. If you say the word carbon, I will ask for your resignation. But the beauty is if you put him over HHS, you don't have to worry. And if he starts going in that direction, trying to use that, bro, you have things to take care of. Remember our conversation. Stay on point. Because he is fantastic in that space. There's been a lot of concern that he would be one of the people not to get approved. I want to let you know what I've heard. And usually when I hear things, they tend to be true. So these are probably true. There is a handful of Democrats, a handful. You know how many fingers you have, plus a thumb, right? Who are good to go on voting for RFK. Two that seem to be public knowledge at this point are Fetterman, and Bernie Sanders. With two Democrats, it's almost inevitable he's going to get approved. So he will take over. I also, at the same time, don't want to set the expectation too high. There's a lot of things that have been talked about, like getting rid of seed oils. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is not going to ban seed oils as the head of HHS. He can't. And the truth is, as much as I hate seed oils, as much as I don't think you should eat them, the entire agricultural system of the United States would collapse economically if we banned seed oils quickly. There has to be an agricultural transition. If you go look, and this is not just the United States, the U.S. and Canada, go look at how much is grown for the production of oils. Corn, sunflower, canola, cottonseed, etc. That you just rug pull the entire agricultural system. You're talking about putting farms out of business. So it can't be instant. You have to change the demand so that the producers will produce something else. What should happen to most of that farmland is it should go into grazing systems, producing animals and animal product. That's what should happen to the majority of the land in America that's currently being used for agriculture. And we could have a system where you could eat red meat for less than the cost of chicken today if we did that. The abundance we could create in beef and the low input cost to farmers and the environmental benefit of all of that, there's no reason not to do it other than the system is set up against it. There is a reality that comes with a nation adopting something that once it's adopted, the inertia to change it is incredibly difficult to achieve. You can look at that with what is the dumbest thing you can build a house out of in the year 2025? And the answer is sticks and bricks, which is how we build almost all our houses. building houses out of low-end pine 2x4s grown in Louisiana and Alabama and East Texas, etc. In a day and age where we can make anything out of fucking steel that fast is stupid. It's stupid. Building homes that look like brick houses that are actually just brick facades in a place where tornadoes it is stupid, and yet we do it, and I don't know why that happened. Houses out of wood that termites eat when we have the ability to produce concrete like that is stupid. Building a square house in a place with heavy wind-based storms when a dome-shaped house literally just causes the wind to move around it and do nothing to it is stupid. Building houses out of wood in a place where fires happen all the time, when if you built a concrete dome structure, the fire would maybe put a little soot marks on it as it went past it, is stupid. Why do we do it? Every fucking thing in the country is set up to do it. Sawmills, supply chains, down to the fucking screws, the bolts, the drywall, everything is geared to this production model. Changing it at this point is extremely difficult. Understand that we're doing it wrong. That is in any kind of decision making, including our topsoil, right? Now, there are the people who want to control you. The Bill Gateses of the world, they want you eating your gruel. They want you complacent. They want you compliant. I'm saying like inside USDA and shit like that, NRCS, et cetera. Like all these people know, even the textbook following new hire in NRCS that went out into the field believing everything they were taught at the university and everything in the government pamphlets, after about 5 years on the job, they've been to enough sites talking to people doing it right to go, yeah, I understand now. Cows are good. Corn is bad, especially in the quantities that they're being done. But how do you change it? How much money is invested just in, like, John Deere combines? How much tooling does John Deere have invested in the ability to produce those combines? How much is already leveraged in debt against that slow change? And what that is going to require is RFK to release every bit of information he can. And to not say, I say that, say, this is the information that your government has always had about this one thing, and it can't be, this has to be the opposite of Trump's approach. Okay? And I don't mean in the thing, but I mean in the speed and the rapidity. Stop that. We can't stop that. We got to go over here. Perfect play. No, but is it a good play? Yes. RFK with the information cannot do it like that. People can track 1, 2, 3 things at any given time. He needs to be slow walking release of, on a weekly basis. We probably need to have something we've never had before. You know how this whole daily White House briefing, you know, that was never really a thing before Trump. Like, it happened, but you never saw it. It was when Trump came, and then Brandon continued it with Deadhead Red, and then Karine Jean-Pierre, right? House comes out and speaks to the country on a daily basis and answers hard questions on a daily basis. We need maybe a weekly thing like that for HHS. And one big thing released. The first thing I would release is all the data that the government has on side effects from mRNA vaccines. All of it, including all the information that the makers provided to the government said, it's okay, all of it. But that's a week. That's a news cycle. Then you pick something else. Maybe then you release all the information that we have on actual seed oils and how much damage they do. Then maybe we do a release on the actual data behind type 2 diabetes in this country, what's actually causing it. Just keep coming and keep coming. Because eventually that will make people go, wait a minute. I can't be angry about this all being Republican disinformation. This can't all be disinformation. I don't care how many washed up bureaucrats or generals they find to sign a memo. Like, that trick doesn't work anymore, if you haven't noticed. And there is so much to come. But it will be a slow, it will be something like that. You will not see edicts coming. That comes from presidents, if possible. Secretaries of the cabinet are not able to just landslide outlaw things. Now, they can work with the president to say, how do we enforce this law that already exists? There'll be some of that. But nowhere near what you expect. And there's going to be a lot of things done in the ag space, specifically in the nutrition space, that you're going to be like, what the fuck? I expect more from Bobby. I want you to know right out, he's going to do what he can. I believe that man is a decent human being who means well and who's mostly right about the things that are inside that world. There is still a reality on the ground of that inertia that's already in place from existing systems and things that you would like to be able to change on a dime that you cannot in good conscience change on a dime. I'm an anarchist. I want no government. If I could push a button right now, though, and all government would disintegrate to nothing, I wouldn't do it. You'd have over half the population dead in a month. I'm telling you right now, like, it would be absolute mass chaos. People don't want freedom, and you can't give freedom to people who don't want it. Now, if I could push a button that allowed individuals to opt out, so long as they weren't hurting somebody else. Why isn't it happening? I'm pushing the button as fast as I can. Am I turning it on and off? Or just once. Okay, is it off or on? Right? I need an indicator light for that button so I know if I pushed it or not. I want to turn it back on. But there are certain things you cannot just instantly do without severe adverse consequences. And doing something like saying, as of next Monday, no seed oils in any food in America is not only would be a catastrophe, it can't be done. The system can't adapt that quickly. Even the food dye they just banned, FD and C, red dye number 5, I think it is, right? Like, I still think there's like a year the company's going to keep using this known carcinogen because logistically it cannot be done. However, I will say something. I've looked into this. That shit's in a lot of things that don't even need food coloring. Like, there's no need of red anything in this product to sell it, but they put it in there anyway. But I think we'll see some good come out of it, but it's going to take longer. JFK, MLK, RFK files are declassified. What will we learn, if anything? I don't think you're going to learn much. If the CIA really was working Oswald and there was a second shooter on the grassy knoll and he had a magnet up his ass that was attracting iron from the Soviet Union at the time that the shots rang out, it steered the bullet so it went zigzag. It's not in a government file. Anything the CIA really manipulated in that never made it in the government file. Don't you remember your 1960s and 70s government propaganda movies? We will disavow all knowledge of your operation. That's the one thing in them that's true. The CIA is an independent organization. It's not even really controlled by the government. I know you think it is, and the director of the CIA reporting to the president. The actual shit they do is mostly self-funded through extortion, through drugs, through a litany of corporations throughout the world that are actually owned and operated by the CIA. Some in, as a mobster would say, legitimate businesses. Okay? There is almost no oversight of the CIA's actual operations. You think they're filing paperwork that gets put in the National Archives? Come on. Come on. And you know what damn sure ain't in there? Whatever the Russians knew or whatever the Cubans knew or whatever, unless they told us, that's not in there either. I keep saying this. I do, honest to God, believe the third shot fired on the Zapruder film was accidentally fired by a Secret Service agent in the follow car that actually hit Kennedy and blew his head apart. And the type of injury that was sustained and the explosion of the cranium is absolutely indicative of what a 223 at relatively close range would do. And anybody who's, and this whole thing, like, his head went this way or the bullet. Look, shit explodes when it gets hit by a bullet. Go shoot a watermelon with an AR at about 12 yards and see what happens. Just saying, just see what happens. The Secret Service were out banging hookers and boozing in a whorehouse in Dallas, which there were quite a few of them back then. Okay, there's a reason one of the most famous porn titles in all of porn history has the word Debbie and Dallas in it. There's a reason, and it ain't just because of the Cowboys cheerleaders. Okay, Dallas was well known as a place where you could get away with that at the time that this all went down. It was a different world. And because they were hungover, still drunk, and half asleep, they were like, maybe we shouldn't be the ones with the gun. They gave the gun to a guy that wasn't really trained to be that guy on Secret Service. Secret Service also wasn't what it is today. Maybe some ways it was even as bad as this was, it was better in some ways, but because it didn't have DEI. But this guy was basically the dude that like waxed the car, made sure it looked good, and drove the car. That was his purpose. They're like, hey, Bill, you take the gun. Well, he did stand up when the first shots were fired. People did hear a shot at street level. People did smell and see smoke at street level. And you would never see or smell smoke from a shot fired four stories above your head. And this makes more sense than any explanation that I've ever heard. And that might be in there. And that would be the reason that you would not declassify files for this long. RFK's dad, right, RFK Sr., on his assassination, I don't think there's much to learn. I think it's exactly what it looked like, and I think that's what we'll find out. MLK, I put under, I don't know, but I do believe the CIA and or FBI and or other elements in our own government are complicit and responsible for it. But I don't have any, like, I've never dug deep into that well to find out. It's not been one of those things that hit me, that called to me to know the truth. JFK was something I've carried as a thing in my head since I was in high school. I had a really great history teacher who did his, he was actually a PhD that taught high school history, which was crazy. And his name was Dr. Larson. And he was also a Vietnam vet. He was an incredible man, really cared about educating kids. And he did his doctoral dissertation on the Kennedy assassination. And he went as far as actually buying a 6.5 Corano, Italian Corano, which is the gun Oswald used, and actually testing shot speed, accuracy at the distance, from elevation, all that shit. He said it was like more expensive to buy the ammo than the gun. And so that was planted in me in like 11th grade. But when I saw the documentary, The Smoking Gun, it almost got boring to me. I still encourage you to check that out. My prediction, though, is all this will do is make the conspiracies blow back up again. Because no, I don't care what's in it. I think that people, again, back to the like functional autism, Asperger's thing, that are attracted to this, maybe have that predisposition. And if the files don't say exactly what they believe, then the files are a lie. The files are corrupt. The Trump's in on it. Like, I think it's going to just explode the conspiracy theories if we get the data. How much does anybody want to bet me that it's either going to come out redacted this shit or they're going to slow walk it to try to hope that it goes away? We'll see. But I haven't seen anything come out yet. If I'm wrong about that, somebody tell me because I want to know what's been released. I don't think anything is going to be released anytime soon, honestly. Next. Oh, I've seen this reported a bunch now. Sometimes from actual news agencies and sometimes from actual trusted sources and sometimes from people that make up bullshit for a living. But there's enough different variety. I believe that it's being said and it's true. There are government employees who, in their own words, are terrified for their futures. They're terrified of audits. They're terrified of having to go back to the workplace because some of them moved away and now they have to sell their house and move back. They have no childcare solutions. They're terrified of being audited. They're terrified of people seeing that they don't do anything. They're terrified, but that's their word, terrified. They're terrified of Trump. They're terrified of Elon Musk. Millions of federal employees are terrified. This is my message. Oh, no. Anyway, let's talk about people being deported, right? Let's talk. That was it. Did you miss it? Oh, no. Anyway, learn the code, bro. I want to talk about deporting people and the absolute lunacy shit that comes from the left. Remember I said earlier when he said he was going to tariff Colombia, we'll never be able to afford coffee again. Valentine's is going to suck. You're not going to be able to buy your girl flowers if they cost 25% more or some shit, right? Oh, no. Anyway, MAGA, make the portion great again. Anyway, so the bigger thing on the mass deportation, Republicans are about to find out how hard it is to maintain their lawns. Yep. I guess that we're all going to die. The Bermuda grass will just grow over our houses and eat us like a carnivorous plant because there's no way in the world that conservatives are going to be able to mow their own lawn. It's not possible. Who's going to? And I cannot tell you how long I've heard this stupid fucking argument. We hired a guy named Nick when I worked with Neil. I was doing the show already, but I was early in it. He was out of he was in the mobile space, and that's why we hired him to run one of our companies, a company called Sirion. So we hired him from Ericsson to run Sirion. And this came up, we were drinking martinis one night after work, and he said something about it. I said, you know, if you can't come here legally, maybe you don't need to be here. And he said, who's going to cut your grass? You should have seen this motherfucker's face when I'm like, Nick, I cut my grass. He couldn't believe that I cut my own grass. He's like, you make more money than me. I'm like, yeah, that's because I own part of the company that you work for. But yes, I cut. He's like, you can't. Like, his mind shut down. Now, he's a dude with a wife like the women I talked about earlier that shop for a living, right? They have, like, the McMansion, and they live this, like, highfalutin life way more than he should be based on what we were paying him, right? But he couldn't conceive. And so when this came around, I thought, Jack, are you just different? Are you a unicorn? Are you one of the only, like, white dudes in America that cuts his own grass, that mows his own lawn? Turns out I'm not. So I ran a poll on X, and I said, who mows your lawn? Here were your options. Me or my family, like your kid, your spouse, whatever. A neighborhood kid. I thought that one would get more than it did. A company using American labor or a company using immigrant labor. 90.5% say they mow their own grass. 1.3% said like some kid in the neighborhood does it. I was shocked by that because like my son made quite a bit of extra money mowing lawns. And like once he knew how to mow the lawn, I'm like, we live in a cul-de-sac. There's like 10 houses before you even get off a street. Go ask everybody. Like half the people said, yeah, I'll give you $20. And they were little lawns too, right? Self-propelled mower. Like he could make $20 in 30 minutes. That's freaking, you know, $40 an hour for a teenager, cash money. So I thought that number would be higher. A company using American labor, 5.8%. And then a company using immigrant labor, 2.5%. So 2, 3%, double it, 5%. I think we're going to be okay. I think we're going to be okay. We don't need illegal immigration just to mow our lawns, even if we did. All of this argument, the Democrats haven't changed at all since they were founded as a party. They're a party of racism. They are. If you told a Democrat in the year about 1830, 1835, we need to end slavery in America, their objection was what? Who's going to pick the cotton? I mean, that's all good and well. But Americans don't want the job of picking cotton. White people don't want to pick cotton. We need somebody to pick, but we need cotton picked. Half the country grows cotton. Your clothes are made of cotton. How in the world will we ever manage to pick the cotton without black people being slaves? They would even feign like they really actually wanted it. You know, I understand, but like the whole economy will collapse. Who's going to pick the cotton today? Who's going to mow the grass? Who's going to mow the grass? Who's going to pick the oranges? Who's going to cut the lettuce? Who's going to serve your food in a restaurant? Who's going to wash the dishes? It's the same fucking argument. Now, I actually believe that if you actually want to come here to do work, especially menial work that the companies legitimately have a difficult time finding enough people to do, that there should be a easy, simple way to do it, that you should be able to stay fairly long term. And this requires something else Arjman is going to try to do, but I don't think he's going to get it done the way he's doing it now. But you also would then have to end birthright citizenship as we know it. You really would. This would be migration. You know, they call them migrants. They're not migrants. Birds migrate. So it gets cold and they go south. And what happens when it gets warm? What do they do then? They go fucking back. Migration means to go and to return and to go. That's what migration means. Any species of animals we refer to as a migratory species goes from one place to another, and then a different part of the year they go back. That's migration. Right? You don't get to change. Like, I don't care if you disagree with my take on the issue. I'm not talking about the issue right now. I'm talking about the verbiage, the word, because that's what Democrats do. They change words to make them sound better. Republicans do it too, by the way. Like the Patriot Act, yeah, my ass. Right? The Freedom Act, my ass. Brought to you by Republicans. Brought to you by Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham should have like every defense contractor, like not on his jacket, like NASCAR. He should have it like it should be like tattooed on his face, because that's what a shill he is, right? So both sides do this, change the meaning of the word. Migration does not mean to go to a place and stay there. Migration means to go to a place and then go back, and maybe over and over again. That's migration. To go to a place and stay there, that's immigration. That's to permanently change your point of residence, is to immigrate. So we need to do something so we can actually have migrant workers. And we do have some of it for like agricultural work. That's the place where it's most structured. And I'm sorry, you purists that want to just deport everybody and never let anybody in, you know, except like geniuses or something. No, there are jobs that we cannot get enough Americans to do, and it won't matter if you pay them better. It won't matter. I know people say that, and you go, well, do you want to go pick lettuce? Well, it doesn't pay enough. What if I pay you $20 an hour to pick lettuce? They're still not going to go do it. And you're like, well, somebody will, but will enough somebodies? And so people that are willing to work for a living and don't draw off the system, I want those people to come here. I also want some mechanism of control so that we do not lose our society structure and what people tend to think of when they think of what makes America great. And I would love to have a path that actually does result in citizenship for those people. But I mean, the second you commit like a major crime against somebody, the fuck out you go. And I think most people would be okay with that. But it's going to take two things. One, convincing people we actually have control over the system, which we do not. Even Arjman here, we do not have control over the system. And two, the idea that somebody can come here, crap out a baby, and then qualify for welfare, and that kid is now a citizen of the country forever. That was never the intent of the 14th Amendment. Never. I'll talk about the 14th Amendment either later this week or sometime next week. I want to talk about something else real quick here at the end, because it is time to start thinking about this. We talked about a lot of current events and all the blood and guts and the sizzle, the stuff that makes more people show up for a live stream. But in the end, this is a survival podcast. And we're preppers, we're permaculturists, we're homesteaders. We believe in taking care of ourselves. We believe in making sure that if something goes wrong, like all these things we talked about, that we're still okay. That means we can feed ourselves. So most of us in this audience, not all, but most, do something to produce our own food. The two number one things, if I poll this audience, that people do to fill that role are grow gardens and keep livestock. And if I ask what livestock do you keep, it's far and away poultry, and it's mostly chickens. And not good, bad, here or there. It just, that's what it is. It is January, what today, 27th. It is the depths of winter. Some of you guys look out of your, like I'm looking out, I see green grass. Some of y'all look out your window right now, you see snow, deep snow, 2-3 feet of snow. It snowed in fucking Florida a couple weeks ago or a week ago, right? I get it. But guys, 8 weeks is that. That's most of March and all of February. Gone. You're looking at April. If you're in Pennsylvania, you're looking at trout season. You're about ready to go out and go fishing, right? Even Pennsylvania, I remember living and growing up there, right? Like you're looking at putting plants in the ground. Texas, you know, you're probably looking around March 10 to March 20, depending on what the forecast is showing and what have you. You know, you're putting peppers and tomatoes in the ground. That means the time to be starting your seeds is now, right now, or very, very soon. So if you like have done this before and you know what you're doing, that's great. But like if all your lights are put away, all your pots need cleaning, you don't have any potting soil made or bought, you're not ready, you haven't gotten your seeds yet, now would be the time. Or a month and a half from now, you're going to be at the freaking store spending lots of money to buy plants. Or hoping somebody's selling them on Nextdoor or something. It's going to hit you that fast. The other side of this is the time of year that everybody thinks of expanding your flock. Your chickens, your ducks, whatever, right? Okay, so chickens and ducks both take, depending on the exact breed and some other things and diet, 22 to 26 weeks to start producing eggs. In quantity, anyway. Like, first little egg pops out, doesn't really count, right? It's like a blank, that first couple, they're not that great. And then it's not quite real. And then all of a sudden they start being reliable producers. That's 6 months. I mean, it's 6 months. Okay. January's gone. Let's count together like Romper Room. I see Felix and Jeff and Crystal and Builder, right? Remember that lady from Romper Room? I conjured her recently in a sarcastic comment, and that's why I was thinking of her. But you know, let's count like it's Romper Room or what was it, Sesame Street or Electric Company. Remember those when your kids, PBS? Some of y'all too young to know that? Trust me, look it up. There was a show called The Electric Company. Today's show is brought to you by the numbers 1 and 5 and 7 and the letter L, right? Okay, let's go there for just a minute and let's count. January's gone. You get your birds tomorrow and just don't count January. February, March, April, May, June, July. That means around August the 1st, they'll start pooping out eggs. You have no birds. You get them now or in the next few weeks. You're looking at production beginning in August. That's fine for you, but that's how long you're looking. And if you wait till March, you're looking at October. All right. This is why it's important for those of you that already have birds that are already producing. When will they molt? End of July, August, beginning of September. 6 week period. Somewhere in there, that's when they're going to molt. If you want new young birds beginning their first egg laying cycle in the middle of your molt, you have about 3 to 4 weeks on the offside, depending on where you live and the age of your birds before it happens. My birds are coming right around 15th of February, my new ducks. Why? It's the earliest I could get them that worked for us. That's why. It would have been better had I started them about November, because they will not, once you go past the molt, they generally will skip that first molt and they'll produce for you. When your birds molt, for those of you that are new to this, they will produce almost no eggs. Because it takes a lot of energy to make an egg. And your birds, though you never see them walking around like they're plucked, they literally shed all their feathers, just not all at the same time. And they're growing back as they're shedding. That's why those of you at big flocks, right, you go to your coop and your holding area in like mid-August, and it looks like something killed 4 or 5 of your birds, like dogs did it, and they're all fine. That's because they're just throwing feathers. It's a lot of energy to regrow those feathers. So when they're regrowing those feathers, they're not making eggs. If you want to span that gap, this is the perfect time to be either hatching your birds or buying your birds. So whether starting your plants or your birds, now is the time to make that happen. I also want to tell you that my item of the day acknowledges that today. Recently, I brought around the grow pots, the 2-inch grow pots, which are great. But you know what's selling at a really great price right now? Barina lights. Barina grow lights are selling a 6-pack of 4-foot lights is $100. These are high-intensity LED grow lights. I'm looking at some right behind me right there. I use these things for all my indoor hydro, indoor aquaponics, plant starting. They're great. These are lights that 20 years ago, one light was $100. And we used lower end lights for a long time. I used to recommend a brand called Kingbo until a few years ago. And they were okay, but you had to like get them almost touching the plants to get them to start your plants right. These are fantastic. And so if you're about ready to get your seeds started, and you, if you do not have grow lights or you want to do more this year, be a good time to pick those grow lights up. Also picking up your plants, et cetera. And I really recommend that you consider doing a mycorrhizal fungal inoculation as well. I'll bring that product around soon, but you can find it at T-Spaz as well. Just know this with your mycorrhizal. What you really want to do with that, you put your seed in your little pot to start it. And then as soon as you see your seedlings just start to push the dirt up, take your finger, go right next to your seedling, make a little divot, drop your mycorrhizal in there, and cover it over. And this is why. It's going to be stored in some sort of medium. The stuff I recommend is stored in little pellets that are kind of like, if you take a capsule and it's got like a time release, kind of like that, like little beads inside of it. And they're going to melt in the moist soil and they're going to release the mycorrhizal spores. Those spores, once they go active, they have about 48 hours to associate themselves with a root system of a plant or they'll die. They can't live absent a plant. So they become animated and react based on biological activity, temperature, and moisture. When you put them into a perfect little pot on a little heated pad underneath a light, they go, woohoo, wake up. And then if there's no roots there, they're like, I hope a root comes soon. And no, it didn't. So the other side of that is the first association the plant wants to make is with mycorrhizal fungi. Before bacteria, before anything else. Now, if it's not there, it won't, and it'll still live. But that's the first thing the association a plant seeks from a microbiology standpoint. I really encourage you to use a good product like Dr. Earth and a good mycorrhizal inoculum, both. And the reason I do that is I say to do that is I have a difference of opinion with a lot of people about this. There are a lot of people in the conventional nursery space that want to give very little fertility to seedlings because they want the plant to have to work and build a huge root system and blah, blah, blah. The plant can only do what it can do in that little pot. It can't do what it does in nature and try to reach out and find stuff. So if a plant is born into a place of biological scarcity, it will adapt to it and it will be weak in nature when the biology is available. It will actually decide, I'm on my own. And if you've ever had, this is exactly what's happening. Not always, but this is one of the ways this can happen. You put the pepper plant in, and the pepper plant goes really tall, really fast, and it's like this spindly-looking plant with one big-ass pepper, like a Charlie-bound tree on it. That plant, in its innate form of vegetative intelligence, it doesn't think, it's not sentient. But the only way you can describe it is to basically give it an analogy. It is in a world of complete scarcity, and I better make a baby as fast as I can. And inside that one pepper, you know, there's 200, 300, 400 seeds. And so I reproduced. That's its first agenda now because it's so stressed. You want plants to be a little bit pampered, and eventually a little bit of stress causes fruit bearing. That's what can happen there. Same thing with plants that, like, it really wasn't too hot, but your cilantro or your lettuce or your spinach bolted really fast. It's stressed. It doesn't think that it's going to get to mature. So it tries to make, same thing happens in countries, right? Look at the birth rate in the 1980s when everybody was starving in Ethiopia. You'd think it would have went through the floor. It exploded. When a species is stressed, it reproduces at huge numbers. And so understand that. Definitely get ready. Start your stuff. All right. I don't know what I'm going to talk about tomorrow. I am going to take a couple questions here before we go. And I think there's a few super chats in here with questions. So that's cool. Matt says, January of 2017 and 21 saw 30% drops from recent all-time highs in Bitcoin. Think we might bear 70K again before we continue on the surge. So what he's saying is true. And the last, so generally your Bitcoin cycle works. You have your first year of the cycle after a halving. And that first year after the full cycle, a four-year cycle is complete, as you come out of your bull market, that will be your post-halving year, which is what this year is. So we had a halving in 24. You'll have a big time up year. You'll have a post-halving year. That's 2025 this year. Huge up year. And then in your next year, as you go back into the four, you know, your beginning of your four-year cycle, you're going to have a huge fall off the cliff. And so there were a lot of people saying, crypto winter's coming. We broke 100 and we couldn't break away from that. This is what happens. It always happens in January, and then it didn't happen. Here's a, well, it's Trump. It's what, no, it's just the cycle. And so what will usually happen, though, is somewhere about now to the end of the first quarter of the post-halving year, you'll have a drop, and then it'll blow and go again. He's saying, will that happen this time? I don't know, and no one knows. And will it be that significant, 30 points down to 70,000? I don't know. I do know this. If it happens, I'll buy all the way down, and I'll buy all the way back up. If it doesn't happen, I'll buy all the way up. This is why I DCA. I have stopped trying to time this market. I have stopped trying to be smarter than it. I've stopped trying to outthink it. It's a very simple formula. And this is why so many influencers in the space won't say it, because it doesn't give them a lot of stuff to talk about. Like, I could talk about gardening and Trump and RFK and Columbia today, and tomorrow I'll talk about something like raising ducks or something. Like, a lot of these people that are doing Bitcoin-only podcast content creation, it's the only thing they have to talk about. And if they actually explained it as simple as it is, take your money and your surplus capital you won't need for at least a year, put it in Bitcoin, and never spend it. How long could you run a show just saying that? There's news and things that come along, but you go out 3-4 months, sometimes nothing really happens. Or the only, so they start making shit up to talk about. Like, you have to spend your Bitcoin. You have to spend your, if you don't spend it, it'll go away. Like, shut up. But I don't know. I'm perfectly comfortable saying that I don't know. My gut is, historically based evidence would be that it will. There's a difference this time, though. We have the most crypto-friendly presidency that has ever occurred, and the most crypto-friendly environment that we've ever had in the United States, period. We're not that high above the previous all-time high of 70,000, 69-something, right? So we're not that far away from, we haven't even doubled the previous all-time high, and we have ETFs. And the ETFs, let's just look at that real quick before we wrap up today, Bitcoin ETFs. I have this really cool dashboard that I don't even know how I found it, but it's built on technology called Dune. And I'm going to bring this up for you guys. Here's your on-chain holdings right now with Bitcoin ETFs. Let me get this guy's question down, because I think I've covered you good enough there, Matt. But we are sitting at how much Bitcoin? It's hard for me to see on the screen there. 1.183 million Bitcoin are being held in various ETFs total combined right now. That is more than 1/21st of all Bitcoin that will ever exist are currently sitting in ETFs. And you can see that there's been, if you're on the video, you can look at the graph and you can see some little downticks as profits were taken or some soft ass hands got shaken out during some of the downside. But the basic story is These ETFs have done nothing but grown. They haven't even scratched the surface yet. They're not even 1 year old yet. I think it was sometime in February last year this shit started. Yeah, February, let's see, because it's to tell me the date. No, it's actually January 10th. So we are over 1 year. January 10th, 2024 was ETF day, apparently. And we've done nothing for a year but grow. And we went from, on the very first day, when they opened the ETF, 619,000 Bitcoin, most of which were held by Grayscale, who's done nothing but get taken from in market share. We went from 600,000, we almost doubled the amount being held in funds in 1 year. By dollar value, it's blown away any gold ETF or any ETF in history in its first year. So that alone is going to provide some level of stability. Most of these people that went into these ETFs, they're not going to sell short cycle. They're going to hold long term. We're getting more and more pension funds adopting this, and it's kind of running away. Matthew also says, what is the future of being able to use Bitcoin for collateral? Will it require smart contracts? I covered that today. I'll just say that's already been covered. But yes, the only way a lender is going to truly be comfortable with Bitcoin for collateral is going to be with a smart contract. The only way the person taking the loan is going to be comfortable putting the Bitcoin up in a collateral arrangement is going to be with a smart contract. Both sides are going to have to understand, and this is part of slow rolling it out, they're going to have to both understand how it works and that it works and have trust in it working. Because there's no way in hell I would just say, well, I'll tell you what, Bank of America, I'll just give you my Bitcoin and I'll just trust you to give it back to me. Would anybody in this audience do that? I wouldn't, right? I wouldn't do it. But the other thing is Bank of America is not going to be like, oh, you have, then prove it that you have it. Oh, just, that's your public address. Yeah, I can see $200,000 worth of Bitcoin in that address. They're not going to give you a loan against it. They're not even going to let you custody it in their bank, but have withdrawal rights against it without a contract. Now, I do think one thing I didn't include today, and I've talked about this on social media recently, I do think you'll start seeing contract terms that begin to release collateral over time based on either appreciation of the Bitcoin itself or repayment of the loan. So maybe like when 25% of the loan is repaid, assuming Bitcoin is either level or gone up in value, 25% of the Bitcoin will be released. Or what you're going to have is people short terminating their loans and refinancing. And so the banks would be way better off just saying, you borrowed 200 grand, you put up $200,000 worth of Bitcoin. You now owe us 150 grand and the Bitcoin is worth 300,000. We're going to cut loose $100,000 worth of Bitcoin. We still are 50,000 over collateralized. So there'll be certain things just written, and this is good for everybody, including the banks, right? Where the banks will be able to say, we don't even have to pay somebody to do it. Literally, the system will begin releasing portions. It might even be that you, on a long-term loan with like a four-phase repayment of remittance, have it four contracts. Contract A releases when 25% is fulfilled. Contract B at 50, contract C at 75, and contract D upon complete fulfillment. That's the type of thing that you're going to see. Jacques said, I can't pronounce your name, so I'm not even going to try. Any update on Biochar course? Super excited. Want to give you a good opportunity to plug Home Food Solutions. Well, thank you for giving me a good opportunity to plug Home Food Solutions. It's Home Food Systems, though. So let's get that right. We do have three great courses you can take there. One of them's free. The Biochar course, I was literally working on building out a chapter in the PowerPoint deck right before we started. I started like 1 minute late because I was on a slide. I didn't want to stop. So it is happening, and we'll get there as quick as we can. Jeff says, do you clean your duck eggs? It's an Easter egg hunt every day for me, and 95% are dirty. So duck eggs we're going to use. If they're a little bit dirty, we don't do anything. Duck eggs for our educated customers who understand this, if it's a little bit dirty, we don't do anything. if they are nasty as fuck, where I don't even want them like touching other food, we clean those. The majority that we sell to customers, we clean with nothing but a hard bristle brush and warm water under the sink. And we do that because it makes the product more sellable and it requires less explanation to the customer. But when they're nasty, and I know what you, like, there's sometimes like they lay them right next to where they're bathing and it looks like shit, but it's just mud. Like when they're gross like that, then we wash them. The best thing to do is not to wash them because of the blem and they last longer. It depends is the answer, like so many things. Ben hits me up with a $5 super chat. Ben, thank you for handling my daily DCA and the strike today for me. I appreciate that. What are your final thoughts on Polarity Exchange shutdown, inside job, or scam? I don't know. And I know that I'm the one that exposed some of you guys to Polarity, but what do I always say? Don't hold on an exchange. So I don't know what happened, because by the time Polarity shut down, I had stopped shitcoining and I had no need of a Polarity. So I wasn't even involved with it when it shut down. But this is why we tell you, I don't care if it's Polarity, I don't care if it's Coinbase, do not hold on an exchange. My instinct is, from what I've seen, what if you lost money with Polarity, it's gone. It's gone. And I don't mean to beat somebody up when they're down or anything. I don't mean to be mean to you, Ben, and I'm not. I'm just saying there's a reason we teach do not hold on an exchange. Now, if you had like $1,000 there and you were waiting on like a buy, it sucks, and I'm sorry it happened. But an exchange like Polarity was never a place to have like tens of thousands of dollars. So hopefully, you know, we're talking hundreds, maybe a grand. It sucks. There's always a risk when you're dealing with exchanges, especially something like, you know, Polarity was out of UAE, I think, because it was so unfriendly to actually build a crypto exchange in America at the time. They also were basically a direct exchange where you were literally always trading with somebody on the other train. There was not really money pumped into it for liquidity to make the trades go faster. Like if you go on Coinbase and say, I want to buy Bitcoin at market rate, and you're not doing like a limit order, it's seconds and it's a fulfilled order. That's because Coinbase is holding some extra Bitcoin that they use to provide liquidity for that. There's not always necessarily somebody on the other side of the exchange. And that's why there's the more liquidity an exchange provides, the bigger their spread will be, which is what the market's really paying and what you're paying. You're going to pay more. But I don't know what happened there, and I don't have a good answer for you other than I think – it's gone. It turns out Ben asked that twice. Ben, you didn't need to super chat me twice to get an answer to that, man. I don't know, man. I owe you at least one more question anytime you want on any subject you want, because you did it twice and you didn't need to do that. I didn't realize you did. Always remember, I hold questions till the end. So don't think if you super chat me, I will see the question. There's no way out of it. It goes right into my box. Quasimod says, would you please do a Bitcoin breakout episode about how normal people should handle their crypto taxes? For example, is it worth paying CoinLedger to do my taxes? If you're a normal person, you probably don't have any, because you only pay taxes if you sell your crypto or you spend your crypto. And if you're spending it through somebody like Strike or something, they should give you a document that tells you exactly what your profit or loss is. But the answer is you do it exactly like stocks, except that it's not only when you sell it, it's sell or spend. And if you're not sure, you might want to pay somebody to do it, because it can be confusing. And this is one of the reasons I say don't spend it unless you really know why you're spending it. Like I still have a pretty big bag of Ethereum. In fact, you know, in spite of the fact that I don't shitcoin at all anymore, I bought it for, just to put it in perspective, 93 cents is when I bought this shit. And I have liquidated pieces of it to do certain things with over the years. I've paid for two vehicles with Ethereum, okay? And I know I could have sold and bought Bitcoin, but I also, like, it's just money that I have is another way I look at it. But, man, I think about things like, I already sold some this year. I'm already going to pay capital gains on it. If I can wait until the next tax year, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. I mean, that's tax strategy is a conversation that is not just about crypto. No matter how specific you are with me, when you ask me what to do from a tax strategy, it's not about the thing you're asking about. It's about your total situation. How big a deal is it for me versus you to have an additional tax liability this year? I don't know. Do you have a business? Do you have multiple businesses? Do you have multiple streams of income? Is your income primarily from a W-2 job, or is all your income from business operations? How much of your business operation income is salary you pay yourself versus capital gains you withdraw from your – I mean, I don't know. You have to talk to somebody about that that understands your situation. Jeff T. says, if you were getting Bitcoin for the first time and going to learn with a small amount, would you use Coinbase or something else? I would use Strike or Swan or River or Fold or anybody but Coinbase. Coinbase, for a long time, I forgave a lot of their sins because it works like PayPal and you can use PayPal to buy shit on it. At this point, they have gotten so absolutely ridiculous with their fees. And I don't mean the Bitcoin fee when you withdraw that goes to the Bitcoin miners. I mean Coinbase fees. Coinbase fees when you buy. Coinbase fees when you sell. Coinbase fees when you withdraw. Coinbase fees when you convert to U.S. dollars and take to your bank account. They are just raping their customers at this point, and their customer service is absolute 1,000% dog shit. So I do not recommend Coinbase at all, period, infinitum anymore. Man, I got a lot of questions here at the end. Colin says, what are the best ways to deal with squash vine borer bogs? I keep finding them too late. The damage is done. Any permaculture methods for this issue? Stop growing squash. Is that not what you wanted to hear? Grow something like kakuza, which is really a gourd, and it makes a great substitute for zucchini. Kakuza is how you say it, and you should be able to figure it out from there. If anybody just can't figure out how to get kakuza seed, email me, jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com, TSBC in the subject line. I'll send you a link for seeds, okay? I have giant ones still hanging 20 feet up in my oak tree out there from last year. But they're a gourd, and they have a really thin, dense vine that the borers can't get in. Trumbuschino, right? I think that's Cucurbita mixta is the family. But if I'm wrong, just look up Trumbuschino. Again, if you email me, I'll give you a seed source, okay? But Trumbuschino squash, I think it's C mixta. It's definitely not Maxima. I think it's mixta. Any of the squash in the same family as Trumbuschino, which includes things like butternuts and longneck pumpkins, anything in that family, has very dense vines, and there are also vines that tend to, if they're covered up with dirt, create additional roots. So they're not impervious to squash vine borers, but they're highly resistant. So that would be your best strategy, is to grow things they really can't damage. The other strategy is grow a lot of squash, because as much as home gardeners hate squash vine borers, squash farmers don't even pay attention to them. Because when you grow a lot of them, they may get a plant or three here and there, but they don't really cause that much of a loss, you know, across like a half acre of squash or a couple 300-foot rows of squash. It's just not that big of a deal to them. The other option is to put netting over them. It would be a way to go. I've been growing food in some of my older bioreactors, right in the bioreactors. Usually the level of the compost is dropped. So then you've got this frame that is done with landscape fabric for breathing, and it's really easy to just throw a net over one of those and grow them in your bioreactor for your first year with your bioreactor, and then use that compost in your next growing cycle. Those are a few ways you can handle it. Like I said, man, there's a lot of questions. American Legend, should we even consider slowing our ETF investments or maybe hold some fiat paper in a safe now? I don't understand that question. What ETF purchases? Should we consider slowing? Are you talking about, if he's talking about the stock market, I think the stock market has a big boom in it this year. I think it has eventually, either next year or the following year, a huge bust, and that might change. But I can't give you short cycle information on the stock market right now. I don't think that's going to be something you need to worry about. Okay, he says the U.S. stock market. Talk to your financial advisor, your investment manager about that. Like, that's another one. He's like, I can't tell you exactly. Like, I can tell you when it's like, okay, we're about to have catastrophic losses in the stock market. Protect your assets, right? Short-term trading advice, I don't do that. It's not my place to do that. And it also is a lot like the tax question. How much money do you have? How much money do you have at risk? What percentage of your wealth is there? Like, there is just no way that I can possibly tell you what you should do from a standpoint of the market's volatility and how it will affect you. I know that I am greatly unaffected by the stock market, even though I have quite a bit of money in the market, but the majority of my money is in other forms of assets and has other mitigation strategies that there's only so much I'm going to say, right? He says he can't afford to lose much of anything now. Is that true, though? See, that's another, like, this is why I don't like this. Okay, if it's in an IRA and I'm looking at your picture and you look like you're like 30, then I don't even want to hear it. I don't want to hear it that I can't afford, because you're not even going to touch it for fucking 30 years, right? If you're like 59 years old and all your money's in ETFs, you're already wrong, right? If it's all leveraged in like growth and income stocks and you're 5 years or less from retirement, you're already wrong. So I don't know how to answer that, but I'm looking at this dude's picture for his icon and he's telling me he can't afford to lose it. And I'm betting you it's not in like a brokerage account outside of a retirement account. And I'm betting you he's not even going to touch this for 30 plus years. And he says he can't afford to lose it. Right. And if that's the case, then your mind's not even in the right place. Then you're one of these people that, like, I had to sell my Bitcoin because it went down. Now, if you're planning on buying a house this summer and all your money that is available to you to do that with is in stocks, you're also wrong. Right. So I can only be so individualized in this, and I'm not an investment advisor or manager. Right. My investment advice is very simple. Make sure you either know what you're doing with stocks or you have a good investment money manager. We happen to have one on our expert council, I'm just saying. And then the other side of that is sweep your surplus capital into Bitcoin and do nothing. These are general macro level. I can't get down into the weeds with a person, especially somebody telling me I cannot afford to lose any money when I think that person is 30 years old. I don't know what to tell you, because I don't know what you mean you can't afford to. Like, you emotionally can't handle it if your portfolio value drops, or you won't have money anymore and you're going to go to the poorhouse. Those are totally different things. And if you're worried, you can always leave what you have invested and put some dry powder aside for a while. But again, personal decisions, way longer than I planned on today. Got to end now, guys. If you have an idea for a show tomorrow, shoot me an email, PSBC in the subject line. Right now, I have no idea what tomorrow's show is going to be. You should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.